Morning. Thank God it's the last week for a while. I basically finalized the program. You should receive it as soon as Chileka has corrected it. It still has to go to Mr. Frohlich for final acceptance and so on, but just to explain that basically the budget votes are over by the end of May. So the last budget votes, I think the president, the last one, I think it's on the 31st or around there. Parliament just before then. We haven't yet been allocated. But what that does mean is that they're probably going to be, for most of next term, they're going to be three EPCs a day. So what that will probably allow us to do is to, where we get permission to sit in the afternoons when they're EPCs. So that's those possibilities, so we can get our work done. So, you know, we've got today, we're finishing Dia. Then I've put down a Dua for the whole days of the 17th and 18th. There are further briefings of the NPC, but in that week of the 17th and 18th of April, where specific clusters are going to look at it. I've already told Mr. Frohlich that we've now met so many times on the EPC, we've looked at it as a committee plus bigger, plus we're having the whole tomorrow looking at it, the NPC. So I said to him that I need that week to finish our budget votes, and he seemed to be okay with it. So, but we'll see. That's the Tuesday and the Wednesday. The Thursday, we'll start with the Dua entities. Thursday the 19th, the Dua entity, TCTA, COBWA, Water Research Commission, those. Then on the Friday, we'll be sitting. There's probably going to be EPCs as well. No, there's no EPCs on that Friday. But we've just come back from the recess, and I need to press some work in there. So Friday morning, the 20th, I want you to prepare well in advance, Ms. Dr. Huang. Well in advance. Put it in your diary, the 20th of April. I just want to finish off the two CMAs, the Overberg and the Breda River, okay? So that whole week is a committee week. We'll be sitting from Tuesday till the Friday. It'll be the week after the recess, so I really want to get the bulk of the work out the way. It makes our load just easier after that, okay? And then the week after that, the second week when we come back, that whole week we'll use for the water boards and the tariffs. There are EPCs in that week, so we'll be sitting afternoon and mornings. Again, on this occasion, we won't be sitting on the Friday because it's Freedom Day. Ma, you're very happy. And then the next Monday is Workers Day, so there's a whole long weekend there. Then from Wednesday, the 2nd of May, we'll start with the DIA entities. So Isismangaliso, Sandparks, Weather Services for that whole week of the first week of May. The second week of May, I'm abroad for this other story, what it's called. You know this thing, I go to this WTO thing. I'll still see if we've put a program together for you to do something in that week. Ma will probably chair. Then the week after, on the 15th of May, the whole day, is a report back on the AMD, Acid Mine Drainage, Progress Report, 15 May, okay? 16 and 17 May, I hope to have some public hearings around the National Waste Management Strategy, the one that came out November last year. And then the week after that of 22 May, I hope to have some public hearings around the National Sustainable Development Strategy, the one that I thought was in 2005, but I hear now it's more recent. Yeah, it was part of your packages. Part of your packages there. Then we may have a week. Then the week of the first week in June is a committee week. That whole week, first week June, I've set aside the whole week for the white paper. First week June. You guys must be ready, eh? And then the last week in June, the last week of term, the term ends on the 22nd of June. That last week is also a committee week. And at this stage, although that may be a bit fluid, because I know people are having conferences and they're going all over the place, I put the EIA regime hearings and the hearings on the mining, I put in that week. Okay? So that is a program. You can see it's a very hectic program. Budget votes. We're sitting sometimes 2-3 days a week to try and finish those budgets. And then there's those hearings of ours that's outstanding. I also, where's this invite? Let me just see if this is for the committee or it's for me. Well, that's you and your partner. All right, I see there's an award on the 23rd of March. There's an awards dinner for water conservation and water demand. I'll just check if this is for the committee or this is, it says for me and my partner, but I'll just check if the committee is also invited. If so, I'll let you know, or at least some people in the committee. Then, how's the study tour thing going? Still working on it? Okay. I think what you must look at, the problem most likely, because something's whispering in my ear that they're not going to allow many things to take place in this part of the year. So I really think we should actually target January next year. So we get a definite slot, a definite approval, rather a longer trip. So I really think we should target January next year because a little whisper to me, there's a certain party that's having conferences in June this year and in December this year, and apparently then they are going to become stickety in Parliament, whether how many people are going to be away from Parliament and things like that. Okay. So I actually think we must hone in on a liquor longer trip to one place. Mr. Moore?
Okay, the one thing you didn't mention is the two pieces of legislation.
Yeah. Now that, of course, I'm actually just finalizing the press statement for the one to call for submissions, the NEMLA. So we will put that into, you'll see there's 1 or 2 weeks I have got open. One in June, I think, and one at the end of May. I've left open exactly. Then the amendments, I have had some discussions with the minister. We're processing them. They're actually quite good, the amendments. The one that's now I'm struggling with is, remember, we wanted a process for removal of the CEO. Now, they have created a process, but they've created to a certain point, and I literally have to now sit and draft. And then the other thing I'm just looking, so that's the only thing that's really outstanding there that I'm looking at. And then the other thing is, I have yesterday received the legislation on hoaxes, although there's only one of them. And it does seem that our offense, the way we've drafted, probably may cover hoaxes. Because a hoax is really a misleading, false statement that's been made. And it looks like we may cover, so we may not have to add to our offense issue that will be fine. So I'm processing that. And if we hopefully, I mean, we'll definitely be able to finish it during this recess. And then we'll fit it in. That week with Dwa, we'll probably just fit it in there. Well, I'll circulate it beforehand. Circulate beforehand, and then let people see it, and then we can quickly finish it there.
There probably wouldn't be any rush, because there isn't going to be a plenary, as far as I know now, after Thursday until June.
Now, they fit it in one on a Thursday. they changed the one EPC they took away, and they created a meeting on a Thursday. I think it's the first Thursday of next term, which will in any case probably be too soon. But yeah, the 26th is a plenary. So I'll let you have that. The other thing is, you remember that we wanted to do the workshop with the enforcement agencies on the rhino poaching. I may have to, because I think June is a bit too late for us. So we may have to fit that in either somewhere on a Friday or at the end of this recess somewhere. But I'll let you know and see how we can do it. We will consult before we tie down a date. but it seems to me we need to have that meeting at some stage. I think those are most of the program issues for now. This program hopefully will, Chilek will just fix it up as I've changed it now. We'll circulate it, send it to Mr. Frulich, see if we get the necessary approvals, and then we'll work according to it. It's basically the same program as previously, it's just juggled around a bit and so on and so on. Okay? There's nothing new in the program. Alright, so that's it. On the program. Is there anything else anyone wants to raise before we start? All right. So today we've got Dia. The DG is stuck in traffic, so she's on her way. We've got three inputs. So literally we're going to have to spend about an hour on each. No more. To try and get our program done for today. Let's start with morning to the department. Let's start with biodiversity. Again, I don't want you to get too hung up on too much detail and stuff, okay? Chief, it's you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, the colleagues from DIA. My name is Fundisile Mketeni. I'm the Deputy DG for Biodiversity and Conservation. Chair, there were questions that were asked the last time when the DG was presenting the overview. I will respond to them in this presentation. I have amended it over the weekend. Chair, the outline of my presentation and honorable members, we'll talk quickly to the structure of the branch. We'll talk to the links with the entities that I work with. We'll show you the strategy map of the branch. We'll look at the 2011-12 performance progress. We'll look at the next year's targets, and also we see the outer years quickly. I'll talk to challenges, implications for the SONA and opportunities, and also talk to international obligations and the targets as members, honorable members asked. I didn't prepare any presentation for rhinos, but I'm ready to respond to any questions because things change as we speak. This is the branch quickly, the structure of the branch. We deal with protected areas. We do planning and management of biodiversity. We have a new chief directorate. We call it biodiversity economy and sustainable use because there are economic issues. There's an industry that should be recognized, that we should regulate and give direction in terms of sustainable use. We also have specialist services as indicated in the presentation of the COO as a move by the department to look at those. Our links with entities, we have SANBI, which is a biodiversity institute. The mandate is coming from the Biodiversity Act. Their mandate is to do research and report on the state of conservation to the nation. That's their mandate. They don't do policies. We do policies, but they must do research, network with institutions, and report on the state of conservation. SANParks, their mandate is from the Protected Areas Act. Their responsibility is to manage a system of national parks and report on the state of those parks. We have Isimangaliso. Their mandate is from the World Heritage Convention Act. They are simply managing Isimangaliso Wetland Park. And they need to comply with the World Heritage Convention Act. We align strategies between DEA and them on an annual basis. We monitor their performance through quarterly reporting and bilateral engagements. We do look at transfers. As the COO indicated earlier, we transfer money to them. They need to report back to the department how they spend those monies. We do have a number of specific agreements on areas of work. For example, the scientific authority, we gave that money to SANBI because they need to report on non-detrimental findings on the use of species. This is quickly the strategy map of the branch. The purpose of this branch is to promote the conservation and the sustainable use of natural resources, also to contribute to economic growth and poverty alleviation. Therefore, we cannot detach economic growth from this mandate. We interact with stakeholders. They are our key focus areas. We also look at attracting and retaining appropriate human capital, and also we try to manage our budget. We are not underspending, as a branch. Therefore, 2011-12 performance, we look at that, and then we look at annual plan of 2012-2013, and also the overall strategic plan. All the greens is where we're making good progress. In terms of expansion, there was a question about how much land. So far, we've proclaimed 129,000 hectares of land. I do have a list of which parks we've expanded, but at the same time, provincial authorities are having their own expansion plans. DG alluded to the 9.5%. The 9.5% of our targets for 2016-2017, not this financial year. Therefore, we achieved that small percentage so far this financial year. We want to have 20% of all state-managed protected areas with a net score of 67%. Last year, we assessed the performance of all protected areas in this country, including provinces. The news were not good. They were underperforming. Therefore, we've set a target that at least in terms of the monitoring and tracking tool, they must achieve a score of at least 67%. So far, 20% of all state-managed protected areas with a MET score above 67%. We said we'll do one integrated management plan. We've achieved that. We have one for Isimangaliso. We have analyzed the World Heritage Convention Act because the act has implications for us. As you know, honorable members, our sites get discussed by UNESCO. It's a small thing. Will just trigger the sites get discussed. Even the issue of a toll in Table Mountain, we know is with UNESCO already. We need to go in and defend that. Hence, we are saying moving forward, we need to have a proper tool to review this. We said we want to have minimum standards for management of captive elephants. We've done that, but we realize that this is a mandate of the Department of Agriculture. Therefore, we've referred that to agriculture to take the matter further. But the minimum standards are in place. 2012.
What is for agriculture?
Elephants. Welfare issues, Chair. Because
under agriculture?
Yes. Because, Chair, we lost a court case, I may explain, on the canned hunting, whereby we wanted to deal with canned animals who are kept in captivity. We lost a case in Bloemfontein to say it's a welfare issue, not a biodiversity issue. The same with these minimum standards. We developed them thinking that it's part of our mandate. Because of that case, we said, can we transfer this piece of software to agriculture?
Why do you think it's part of your mandate? I don't understand it. Because a court case found against you on something. What does that mean?
It's because of a welfare.
Why do you think that makes policy?
In the Animal Act, Protection Act.
But what protection falls under agriculture? I'm not understanding. Agriculture, do you tell me agriculture makes laws for all wild animals?
Welfare. As long as an animal, if there's a welfare issue, agriculture must deal with it, whether it's a wild animal or a domesticated animal. Welfare is about looking after animals, feed them.
But most innocents walk in the wild, so what's that got to do with welfare? They're not kept in captivity.
They are, Chair.
They walk in the wild. They're not,
they're not
a canned lion or a... No, you people are wrong, man.
Chair.
You are looking at this thing wrongly.
Every animal kept in captivity, not in the wild. Once it's domesticated, because there are elephant safaris in this country where people are riding elephants. Those elephants are tame and no longer wild. Therefore,
maybe one or two elephants that people ride on. The vast majority are in the wild. So why are you saying that this falls under agriculture?
Chair, there's 150 elephants in captivity as we speak, which are getting ridden by tourists.
Yeah, but that's a separate issue.
Yeah.
You're talking here about a number of standards for management of captive elephants.
Yes.
So you're talking about those 150?
Yes.
So why do you put them here if they don't fall under you?
Chair, we put as our target, as our mandate. We develop minimum standards. All I'm reporting on progress on that work, but I'm saying now that work we have referred to agriculture. We have done the piece of work to develop those minimum standards. Because we're under the impression that we need to look at the issue of captive elephants. We also looked at the issue of top status. The second draft DOPS amendment has been initiated. We'll finalize it in the coming financial year. We also had the target of increasing the number of threatened ecosystem protected. Our target was to develop a list of terrestrial and ecosystem, and we have published those for implementation. On the 2012-13, Chair and Honorable Members, we have listed what we want to do with regards to DOPS, regards to translocation, regarding the regulation for the hunting industry, and also we want to develop a species management plan for the black rhino, for the cycads, and also for the pelargonium. We list those species because we see some pressure in terms of their use. Hence, we are elevating them to develop management plans in terms of the legislation. We agreed that we are going to develop 5 management plans for the Ramsar sites. We have developed 3 so far for Prince Edward, Makuleke, and the Orange River mouth. We are assessing GMO applications with agriculture. Each application that we receive, we process it immediately. The same with CITES applications. We are checking them and we process them speedily. And also TOPS applications, we are dealing with those. Therefore, the outer years, we are saying we want to process them as they come. If we receive 20, we want to have that 20 processed. We also have a target of publishing and implement alien invasive species regulations. We've finalized those regulations. Risk assessment framework guideline for evaluation. Although it's green, that's because it's linked to the above, we are in the process of appointing a service provider to develop that guideline for us. In the after years, we want to have risk assessment framework and the guideline developed. We want to have monitoring plans for control plans. We want to have a national strategy for alien invasive species. All of those things on those targets of the next year are part of the regulations. Therefore, we want to make sure that we implement those. This area of reducing the hectareage affected by drought. We had a discussion as a department that it should be sitting with the implementation branch, but we are reporting it here. We had the target of 800 hectares to be cleared and rehabilitated. It's an ember there because we only done 329 by this time. But in the after years, again, we are going to also engage the implementation branch to look at the 1,000 hectares because we must identify as this branch those areas that need to be rehabilitated. We, as I indicated, we don't do research, but we must influence some of the research agenda of SANBI and other institutions. Over the last 4 years, there's been an issue around elephant management. We even developed norms and standards for the management of elephants. We said there should be a research program. Therefore, we facilitated the process of assessment, and 7 areas were identified to do research on elephants. Therefore, we are still going to focus on this to make sure there's research on elephants, there's research on biosafety because there's an issue around GMO. We are working with DSD and NRF, and also we want to look at the issues of land degradation research. We are also do some of the ecotourism programs linked to biodiversity. There's a community lodge near Kruger Pafuri Gate, whereby we facilitated the development of that lodge for community. An operator has been appointed, and a draft agreement is in place for them to operate the lodge with the communities. Therefore, moving forward, we still want to look at the cross-border conservation trails and also an integrated development plan for the Blyde Bushbuck Ridge area, because we identified Bushbuck Ridge as a node because of the threat of the Blyde catchment, which supplies water to the Kruger National Park. We want to deal with the wildlife sector to look at issues of transformation, linking this to the issues of land reform, because there's a lot of land being transferred to communities, but it's no longer productive for traditional agriculture. Therefore, we want to look at issues of wildlife management so that they can benefit from that. Therefore, we'll look at transformation issues there. We have BAPS permits, is benefit sharing permits. We process all of those applications. This is an industry that is growing, like the issue of pelargonium, like the issue of woodia, like the issue of rooibos tea, like the use of honey bush tea. Those are industries that are linked to biodiversity. There's a lot of bioprospecting. Therefore, we're also engaging industries. We're also approving applications for bioprospecting. We are busy negotiating guidelines to deal with this issue. In terms of protected areas, we agreed to have at least one co-management agreement to facilitate. We've facilitated with communities in the Eastern Cape around Double Drift and Hluleka, so that we have a test case, because it's in the legislation that there should be co-management agreements between protected areas and the neighboring communities. Therefore, moving forward, 2012-13, we want to continue looking at these issues of transformation. Compliance framework for all our act, whether it's CITES, World Heritage, and or the Protected Areas Act, because people are saying, you have a legislation, we don't know how to comply. Therefore, we're simplifying by developing a framework that people can use to comply with. Therefore, we want to finalize that compliance monitoring framework in the following year. There are issues around enforcement, because as we speak, with the rhino poaching, we are establishing a wildlife reaction unit to make it permanent. There are countries that we can learn from in terms of those activities. Therefore, we are assessing more strategies in order to deal with issues of enforcement. We are working with Interpol in terms of information sharing, interacting with their operations, following up on issues that are linked to the whole issue of poaching. This one is about compliance with the bioprospecting regulations. We want to do inspections, but there are many facilities around the country that are bioprospecting. We want also to do inspections on compliance with DOPS. Also, we want to make sure that the site is implemented by all provinces. Minimum requirements for biodiversity in land use planning has been done in consultation with and other branches. Mining and biodiversity guidelines are in place. We will be finalizing the forward now so that we can make it a public document. We are also working with the COO branch on issues of spatial planning, especially in areas where there are threats to biodiversity. We are working with the Department of Mineral Resources, whereby we have developed a document that can assist in our cooperation. This is the document that the DG last week engaged her counterpart in DMR. Now we want to make sure that the ministers agree in terms of this matrix so that there are no conflict moving forward in terms of land uses. We have a framework for mainstreaming biodiversity in local government. That framework has been approved by MINMEC. We are also building capacity with the local government in terms of those areas of cooperation. We are consulting with the stakeholders in the implementation of Nagoya Protocol, because this protocol was negotiated for almost 9 years to come up with a legally binding regime. Therefore, we have adopted the protocol, but now when we are busy consulting to make sure that the competent authority for the implementation of Nagoya Protocol has been identified. We are participating in Ramsar preparations, because the next COP is coming now in May, COP 11 in July 2012 for Ramsar. CBD, we are reviewing our NBSAP, because it's one of the obligations that we must have an NBSAP. We're doing work on migratory species, working with the oceans, because sharks and turtles are some of the migratory species. In terms of terrestrial, there's a lot of birds that are migrating a lot that we need to look at. I won't waste your time there, Chair. And also there are issues of cross-border conservation in terms of implementation of all the cross-border tourism policy harmonization, and also to make sure that there are investments in TFCAs. In terms of challenges, briefly, honorable members, there's an escalating environmental crime, as we all know. The rhino poaching is the problem. We want to secure cooperation with some of the Asian countries, like Vietnam and China and Thailand. There's an issue of unsustainable use of biodiversity and ecosystems. Mining in sensitive areas, an issue is the one we're sorting out with DMR. In terms of the SONA, there's an issue of the new growth path. We cannot ignore that, because it will impact on our ecosystems. Therefore, we need to look at how we can contribute on around issues of wildlife economy and green economy. The issue of infrastructure development in protected areas and in TFCAs. Green paper on land reform, because some of our protected areas are under claim. We need to look at this. We need to look at issues of stewardship programs, especially for the land under reform, and also the issue of mining and dealing with it comprehensively by even developing an offset strategy for mining activities in protected areas and in World Heritage sites. The question on obligations, Chair and honorable members, in terms of the CBD, we have obligations. We ratified Nagoya Protocol. We must make sure that is implemented. We must play a role in intergovernmental committee for that. We need to create awareness on that. We need to participate in scientific bodies that are preparing for the main COP. Well, you have intersessional meetings, like in the case of climate change. Also in the CBD, we need to implement a program of work on protected areas. We need to review the NBSAP. So far, there are only 4 countries review their NDSAPs. We are starting that this process this coming financial year to make sure ours is also reviewed. We need to meet targets on species, because before 2010, the world said we want to halt species loss by 2010. Came 2010, the Global Biodiversity Outlook 2 that was produced internationally said no country has met the targets. Therefore, again, moving forward to 2020, we are looking at meeting those targets as global targets. We are participating in the Rio Pavilion. Even in Rio Plus 20, there will be that effort to create those synergies. Good work was done during the climate change COP in Durban. There are issues of economics and biodiversity. We have developed a TIP report strategy as a country. There's a big issue now around science policy interface called IPBES. It's like the IPCC under climate change. The drive is to have a science that is credible and verifiable that can inform policies, so that people cannot argue to say the science that we are using to make cold policies is not credible. Negotiations are underway to develop that platform. We are participating on migratory species. The targets are there that we must develop. Like there are MOUs on sharks with the shark range states, and also there are issues of developing plans around those species. Also under CMS, the National Scientific Advisory Body need to be in place to provide scientific advice. We need to participate in standing committees on World Heritage. This year is celebration of 40th anniversary of this convention. Teams are being developed between our department and Department of Arts and Culture so that we can look at the issue of World Heritage and sustainable development. Because the big discussion now is around the conflict between mining and World Heritage. Therefore, the issue is not unique here in South Africa. We want to have regional workshops and also an international workshop in September to look at these issues. There are issues of CITES. COP16 is coming. We need to prepare for that. Even the whole debate around opening trade on rhino horn, we have views there. I know some people say, go to COP16 and present a proposal to in order to open trade on rhino. Issues of management of elephants are coming up there. We need to report on that progress. On Ramsar, as I said, COP11 is coming. Therefore, we are starting with our preparations. On desertification, we need to develop NEP. We need to have a drylands program. We are busy with that work. On SADC protocol on wildlife, we need to enhance our TFCA initiative to combat crime. We need to harmonize policies. We need to sign treaties. We need to develop tools to deal with that. Thank you very much, Chair. I can talk to rhinos depending on the questions. Thank you.
Now, you spoke a lot a while back on rhinos. Look, that's really a huge amount of information. I mean, I don't even pretend to understand that I understand what's there. That's not your fault, DDG. You tried to present it quickly. The problem is with this presentation, you know, we must find a way of presenting it in a more understandable way. Because if you look at these diagrams, you know, it may not fit together, but, you know, you talk once at BABS and then BABS again and BABS again, and, you know, it's everywhere. So to try and follow, as I sit here now, I absolutely can just remember orange and green. I do not remember a word that was said. Because it's so much information, and it's not put in an order for us to understand. The other thing I want to know, DG, do we have a diagram somewhere of all these obligations that we have? Some obligations we have, we belong to structures, plus we report. Others we just report, etc., etc. Do we have something drawn up somewhere to show Department of Environment and then show all these things that we're doing? So that we can see it, so I can look at a picture and I can actually then ask you what's going on. Now I can remember Ramsar and Nagoya and Oya and Doya and whatever else,
But it's difficult for me to understand. Do we have a have we got a responsibility? Is there some target we have to meet? Because, and again, it's not your fault, DDG. You've tried in a digestible way to give us. So, but the problem is, if we don't, if one doesn't have the whole picture of what this department is doing, so I think it's very important that we draft a diagram. Someone sits down and drafts a diagram. RAMSA. We report annually to them. We attend their meetings. We're part of the decision maker. We're part of a scientific whatever, so that we can see what it is. You know, that looking at one big picture, one can see it, not trying. But okay, those are just some of my immediate issues. Can we have some comments or questions from members? Who wants to kick off? Noah? Jane? Ms. Manganya? Ms. Kosana? Oh.
Yeah, you're not sort of talking. Sorry, Chef.
I called you now just to expose you.
Chef, I said, if you are born before technology, sometimes it beats you. So I'm still learning. I'm sorry for this. Mine is just a minor question because I understand what the presenter was saying, more information. I just want to know if we do have the specialists that we are talking about is for, we have drawn them inside the country or they are from outside the country. Because last time when we talked, we said this department mostly is challenging because we don't have people who are specializing with it. So I wanted to know, because you put specialist, but there's nothing in that block. So I want to know if this specialist, we are drawing it from other countries, as we are borrowing. Thank you.
Mrs. Kosana.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I just want to be clarified about the receival of water by this Kruger National Park from Bushbuck Ridge. Because in the area there is an outcry of shortage of water in Bushbuck Ridge. I just want to get a sense, how do you get this water from that and the and with water board payments and so on. Can I just be clarified on that, Chair? Thank you.
I think he said that, but he'll answer it, that Blyde River is the catchment area. So the water in Kruger comes from those mountains or there in, I don't know from which rivers, but I think that's what you said, the catchment area. But you answer the question, Mr. Morgan.
Thanks, Chairperson. I have two questions. The one is, and I would imagine this is the correct branch to direct this question to. The first question is, has the department applied its mind to a review of the sort of efficacy, success, and failures of the commercialization strategy of Sandparks? It's a question to ask you, not Sandparks. And the reason I say that is it was raised in this committee last year and put in a committee report passed by Parliament. So I would like an update on that. It is 10 years after, 10, 11 years now after that strategy was first passed by Cabinet. Secondly, and it is a Rhino question, is where is the department on applying its mind to whether in fact it is going to make its submission to the COP in Thailand on whether to propose the legalization of trade in Rhino or not? Because, I mean, I haven't I haven't made up my mind on this issue because it's hard because government actually, this department hasn't actually got an opinion, hasn't got a document of research. I mean, I know that you wanted to do a study, and if so, where is that now at the moment? A very difficult subject to engage on because we actually don't know what your studies are and what the opinion of the department are. And I worry about it because, of course, let's say you say, we're going to do it, we want to put a proposal. I mean, aren't you leaving it a little bit late in the day? That COP starts in 51 weeks' time, 1 week less of a year. And I'd imagine you'd have to do a lot of pre-work. You don't go to a COP and get anything done by just arriving in Bangkok and saying, this is what we want to do. It's presumably months of lobbying. So, you know, it is something you guys, I think, have to communicate better on. I mean, it makes people anxious both ways, quite frankly. And I accept it's a wedge issue and it's very, very difficult. But, you know, please update us on that particular issue. Thank you. Thanks, Jeff.
Can I ask you to add to that? I'm ignorant of the CITES processes. If you want to change something, what do you do? Do you beforehand give notice and say, put this on the agenda? How long before it does it have to happen? So in other words, remember I asked, was it you, DDG, that asked to give me a timetable working backwards? If we were wanting to make any requests for anything, to keep it the same or to change it, I mean, what are our deadlines working backwards? Because I think this question is an important one. I mean, there are obviously lobby groups on both sides. I'm going to regret what I say now, but I'm starting to form an opinion on my own of what I think it should be. So that means I'm going to get lobbied now to find out what is my position. Well, not my position, but what I'm thinking of where we should go policy-wise with this. And DG already knows I engaged there. But you're not allowed to tell anyone. But I think this is an important thing. You see, because as Mr. Morgan is saying, the problem is just to say, well, we leave it for another year, for another year. What are we doing in the process? If you say you leave it for another year, you're then saying, well, we're keeping the status quo and therefore 500 whatever rhinos are going to get slaughtered again. Without us in any way dealing with it differently and we're dealing with it now. I mean, that's really the issue. You know, we should, if our position is as a government, we think our position is correct what it is now, and we're just going to have to fight poachers, well, you know, that's a policy one arrives at, and it may be right or may be wrong. But the point is, we cannot, and I'm saying this advisedly, we cannot ignore making decisions on the issue because there are lobby groups that may not like it. One way or the other, whatever decision we make. I mean, as a government, we really need to make a stand on this. I'm not saying we're not doing anything, but clearly what we're doing is only got limited successes. And if we go this way, then what we're saying to the country... Yes, we are prepared to lose X amount of rhinos every year. So we must say that. We must realize that that's the consequence of it. So I'd like you to explain that process to us, and I'm still waiting for the timetable, time frame, and for you to draft it so that I can understand. I mean, Mr. Morgan clearly knows a bit more. He says it's 51 months, weeks. Well, if it is, then where are the deadlines? By when can you give items to the agenda and so on. Okay. Anyone else? Mr. Matebe, Dr. Huang?
Hello. Charlie,
just put your car alarm off.
How long does it take for a
Thank you, Chairperson. I saw this PNC presentation is a lot of detail. Yeah, just like the Chairperson you say. Yeah. For the member, I want to immediately half an hour can understand all. But I quite interesting for the PNC, for your cooperator for the three entities. But from the your strategical plan, I didn't see the your budget allocated by MTF. I think it's from the 2012-13 year, you allocated about for 468 million. But now we're talking for the your 2011-12 year. So from your strategical plan, I didn't see that you allocated the budget. Then how you link to the other three entities, especially you highlighted for the Rhino. I don't know from the your side how you can cooperate and link to the same park, and there is a Rhino issue from the your side, because you also highlight you don't doing the research. So I don't know this one is Chairperson. I very interesting. This is quite a lot of detail for the this strategic plan, but haven't showed to the committee is. Allocate all the finances to utilize each item. So I'd like to know this you from you link to the three entities, Sanbi, San Park and Mangaliso. So how you can the cooperation and the support? How you to support these three entities? This is very important. I'd like to know. What's your detail inside? Thank you.
Sorry, Dr. Huang. I'm just trying to find out. Apparently, there's a fire door that's stuck or something, and they can't fix it, so this noise is going to go on for a while. All right. Any other questions? Can I ask two things to add to that? You haven't mentioned here in your input, but you will remember when the rest of your department gave input on the budget, they showed us an increase in the money for conservation. I'm very worried that you're not saying anything to us about that. Now, I know your answer is going to be no, well, it's Sanbi and Isismangaliso must ask them. If you were going to say that, that would be the wrong thing to say. Because this is a policy issue and it must be driven by you. They are the implement. And so, you know, you must say something to about us, this extra money. What are we going to do with it? Are we buying more conservation land? Are we going to put in infrastructure? Have you guys looked at the plans? Are you happy with the plans? Is it exactly what you want? Is it the priorities that you've got, etc., etc.? I mean, that's absolutely vital. If you, the policy, as you say, you're the policy center on these issues, well, then you must tell us. So when Isismangaliso comes, I can then ask them and say, but are you doing that? The second issue is this mining guidelines. You said that the DG is engaging already on them, on the good practice guidelines. You say he's engaging on it already. To what end? For cabinet to adopt it? What are we going to do with it? When would we see it after it has been adopted, or when it's in the dustbin? At which stage are you planning to let us also have a look at it, as it's one of the items on our agenda? You know, this issue of the fine balance that has to be drawn between sustainable development and the maximization of our mining resources, as I like to put it, is a balance that has been struck. Now, are you going to engage on it your own, or at some stage are we going to be privy to it? so that we can give our inputs into it, say whether we think it's far enough or not far enough, or it's not strong enough. So I would like to have some idea of what you guys are thinking around that. I'm very happy that there's an initiative like this, but it seems to me that, to put it bluntly, if you don't maximize the role players and stakeholders that have an interest in this, then we, even if we get an agreement, it may be a narrow compromise agreement, because two departments have to agree and try and get it through, and it may not be the kind of balance that we're looking for. I'm saying maybe. Maybe it's the best thing that ever happened. I don't know. So those are the issues. Let's have those answered and then see what comes out of that.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I must apologize about information overload and unpacking. The sector is too busy. There's too much information.
No, don't apologize. All that I'm saying is we must look at a different way of presenting so that it makes it.
We look at the diagram for international obligations and the flow and the obligations. On the issue of specialists, we are not planning to use specialists from outside. As we recruit, we'll recruit people with qualifications and skills to give that specialist service as required by the issues. Therefore, we'll try to recruit within the country from our own experts, and then we'll put proper adverts so that we get the right candidates to give the specialist input. Because when you say specialist inputs, sometimes it will be on species, sometimes it will be on ecosystems, sometimes it will be on use issues. Therefore, it will be broad. And then we're not looking for a big structure on that. We want few experts who can give that advice. If you have to co-opt elsewhere, we'll have a mechanism to get that specialist input, especially on issues around around policies. The Bushbuck Ridge program, we have a dedicated presentation on this because it's a multi-sectoral thing. Because as far as the department is concerned, we want to look at issues of the river systems, the issues of alien invasives in the catchment itself, the issues of ecotourism in the area. We have identified the departments that we need to work with, because to answer the honorable member's question around the water use, we've realized that there's a canal that is not properly managed, taking water from the catchment for small agriculture by women of the area. But at the same time, in the area you have Inyaka Dam, and then you have a water treatment plant that is dry. What you are pushing for with rural development in order to save the water in the river, we want local government, water affairs, and rural development to look at fixing, whoever responsible, the treatment plant itself, also putting a pipeline from Inyaka Dam to the treatment plant so that there can be water for domestic use. Therefore, that one will assist the issue of stealing the water from the canal. But there's a lot of leakage. That's why the lower down rivers in Kruger are getting dry. In the catchment itself, for the last 20 years, we have been removing the alien plants to get through the Working for Water program. Now, the Department of Agriculture, the Forestry Division, says they only need 1% of this country to plant timber, which means alien, your blue gum and your pine trees. Therefore, they are now to go back to the area. We are saying we can demarcate jointly how much area they can replant those trees for timber. Whilst we are mindful that these alien plants take a lot of water from the catchment. Therefore, it's an integrated environmental program that we're developing for Pushback Ridge. Hence, we want to work with many departments. But at the same time, we want to achieve our mandate to save the Sand River, to save the Crocodile River, all the rivers that are flowing into the Kruger National Park, because there are implications downstream if the catchment is not well managed. The commercialization, Honorable Morgan, of sandparks, when we look at their bottom lines, they are improving. Because, if I can still remember correctly, we are only transferring about 16% from our fiscals for their budgets. There were some cuts by the Treasury in terms of sandparks expansion money to expand the conservation estate. But their bottom line shows that the commercialization strategy is successful. Because they monitor those revenues coming from that. Because even in the board, they do report to say the 7 sites in Kruger, how are they doing their revenue collection strategy. Therefore, we've been seeing improvements. But the improvements are also influenced by our own investment. Because there's been a lot of infrastructure investment by DIA through our expanded public works on tourism. Therefore, Honorable Morgan, they can give more details on this, but as far as we get information, the commercialization strategy is doing well for them. On the CITES and the trade, Chair, you are both right that we know that there's lobbying. Come again, Chair?
That's not the question. The question is, have you guys made any assessments as to the feasibility and the viability of the kind of commercialization project? The fact that they're working better, that's good. But the separate issue is, have we looked at an assessment of the kind of things that we're doing and whether they're the best that we can do under the circumstances? I think that's more the question.
Okay.
DJ?
Okay, mine is working. We have made a decision to undertake a review of they normally have what they submit to the department is revenue plans. And within that, then we would look at the commercialization strategy of Sandparks. And this is a project that we were supposed to have done, but I think we delayed because of all the changes that we've undergone as a department. So I think into the future, we are going to come back to the committee with what we are finding from the review. We're still running the process of reviewing. I think what Fundi is responding to is whether there is a benefit for now. But I think the question is about the long term.
Whether the commercialization we're falling
in the long term
increased our budget and so on. That's
So we then had to, the process that of the review, we undertaking it with Treasury. But Treasury already, when we were busy with our budget submission last year, they were already coming with different views from the department's views. In that, I remember on Kruger particularly, they were saying even the pricing strategy of Sandparks must be changed, and that would interfere with the objectives of access in terms of the parks in the country. So we have to go back and have a discussion, I think, with the minister and confirm whether, because our review is not based on how much Sandparks makes for us. It has to be broader than that in terms of it still advancing our conservation strategy as a department beyond real. I mean, yes, revenue is important, but at the same time, there was initially a discussion that we had with between the department and the entities about the public good, that responsibility that government has in respect of these entities. And I think that is the kind of discussion that we should be able to bring to the committee and present our thinking on what exactly, substantially, what does it mean and how our costing is in respect to public good versus the commercial prosperity of our entities, because they are not in themselves going to be self-sustainable in the long run.
I think that assessment is important and must be done quickly, because I know some people are worrying about Kruger Park, whether, and we went there and we all thought that that's what they're doing there is fine. I mean, but people still today tell you, no, this is a big luxury thing. So, you know, they're those worries. My worry more is commercialization leads to exclusivity. I mean, that's what worries me. I mean, in the end of the day, when you commercialize, it means that people have to come there and they have to pay. Now, if you have communities like in South Africa where the vast majority of people are excluded from something because of the color of their skin, and now economically there's a problem, when we commercialize, we have to find ways that we're not excluding people again. I mean, you know, one of the things, you go to Isismangaliso, I mean, you can see through the cost structure there that the local people will never go and look there. I mean, they'll never go and drive around. And firstly, they won't have a car, but to go around in that park and so on, because they're not going to afford. If you make decisions about life, whether you're going to buy bread for your family or whether you're going to take a trip in Isismangaliso with your family, I mean, there's a no-brainer. So those kind of balances that we need to look at, we must make sure that we have looked at each policy of Sandparks and Isismangaliso, and that we're happy that the way they've structured theirs and making decisions around commercialization, that firstly, clearly, we're staying within the norms of sustainable development, but secondly, that clearly it's not a policy of exclusivity. To make it viable, we need more money. To get more money, we need to get it from the middle class and the rich. To do that, we're excluding the poor. So those are the kind of balances I want to see. I want to be assured that there's an assessment being done, you've looked at all these issues, and when I speak to the public, I can speak with some assurance. At the moment, there's no assurance we can speak to because there's no such assessment that's been made. And the best that we can say is we've improved our revenue stream. Well, we may have improved our revenue stream for foreigners that come here and middle-class white and a few black South Africans that can go to those places. But that may not be that mean accessibility has been improved. So those issues, I think, is what I think behind also what Mr. Morgan is raising his question, which I really think is an important one, okay? So that when we talk about, when there's queries about commercialization, that we as a committee can look past the narrow interest of a particular group and say, well, this has been looked at and we're happy. At the moment, we can't really say that. I mean, you know, there's a difficulty to say that. All right, go on with the other issues.
Chair, on CITES, we had a discussion internally, and we understand that there's lobbying going on. The industry feel that we must go to CITES with the proposal to open the trade. But we feel, honorable members, the timing is not right to go and engage on that. But we are still developing the plan, Chair, because our view is to go in COP17, not COP17.
But wouldn't the time ever be right?
It will be right.
The people that are opposing it now,
yes,
will never change their mind.
Yes.
And maybe rightfully so. I'm not giving a value judgment on their point of view.
Yes.
I'm just saying the facts of the matter is they want to burn all rhino horns and they want to definitely never let there be anything like it. So it's not a question of that group, or it's not a question whether the industry wants it. The question is a policy issue. How do we maximize the protection for rhinos? That's the issue. It's not a question of right. I mean, you know, that's why, you see, when you say we don't think the time is ripe, then I'm wondering when is the time ripe? When we've only got one rhino left? Two rhinos? Three? Four? Five rhinos left? You see, I'm trying to say the issue can't be the time is not right. The time is right. The question is, do we do we want to change it or not? If we don't, that's fine. I'm not saying we have to change it, but then we must say so. The problem is, I do not think we can say the time is not right. That can't be our answer. It just cannot be the answer. Because implicit in that answer is that what we want to suggest, that there's something wrong with it. If we want to suggest a change, if we want to not suggest a change, of course, well, then the time can't also be not be wrong. So I think we must, I know what you're saying, I know the pressures, I know the rest of us are scared to engage the world about these things, I know all those things. But I don't think, you know, I think, and I know also you're sitting here in public, there are processes taken behind closed doors, you have to be careful of what you respond to. I understand all those things. But I do think that we must start thinking clearly about this. There's a right and there's a wrong. Nothing is completely right and nothing is completely wrong. We really have to sit down as a department and assess, in the world environment that exists, what is the best regime we can create to create the maximum protection for rhinos? That's the question. The question shouldn't be, are we with this interest group or are we with that interest group? And that is why, the first time we heard you, why I said we should have a time frame. Because if we don't have the time frame, it means you and the department are just going to say, well, the time is not right. If there's a time frame, at least that forces the issue onto the table. And to say, if we want to do something, we must do something before June of 2, we must put a proposal forward, whatever the proposal may be. So that, you know, I know what you're saying about the time is not right, but for me it's the wrong answer. For me the time will never be right. Because the problem is there's no right or wrong answer here. The answer is somewhere in the middle. It's a grey answer, not a black and white one. Okay, but go ahead with your answer.
Chair, yes, we can come to an answer, but the fear is to fail. If I may unpack that, Chair, because I'm going also to the plan that you want from us. The proposals should be 6 months before the COP, because each state party must put a proposal to the COP, to CITES. If we want to put a proposal in the next COP, by October, we must submit a proposal. Chair, we have learned even during the Ivory, if you don't lobby properly on time, you don't succeed, because it works on two-thirds majority. For example, Chair, in the plan, we will even request Parliament to go and lobby EU Parliament, because if you don't get EU on your side, no proposal go through. We have seen proposals fail, like the one of Tanzania and Zambia last COP. They wanted to downlist their elephants so that they can trade on them. They failed dismally because their strategy was bad. It was not well thought strategy. They didn't do research beforehand. Hence, the results from our studies that we are commissioning will assist us. When we put our case, we can have side events to show that we did these studies, that's the research we do. There's no link, if there's no link between trade, opening the trade and the rhino poaching. Another one, Chair, that we perhaps we are not saying. Our rhino numbers, which will also in the plan, and the breeding rate, and the number we lose of rhinos. I know one rhino is too many. We are not in a crisis, Chair. But the public out there saying we are in a crisis, again, to be conclusive in this statement, we must do research, because we must even know what rhinos are being killed.
We may get more rhinos each year than we lose. It's true. The one chap that came and gave an input to us during the hearings came with those figures, and he showed us the chapter sitting there, the dark hair. He showed us the figures that there are more births at the moment than killing at night. Now, I have no problem with that, and that gives me some happiness, but that doesn't mean there's no crisis. For me, there's a crisis. Why is there a crisis? Because the other day there was naught poaching. There's now 500. And that's only increasing all the time. That's a crisis. Even those, he showed us, he was a very balanced man. He showed us how, at least since we started intervening, the thing started planing off. Again, good sign. But it's a good sign only for 2 or 3 months until they get past the steps we've taken now to then do it in another way. So, you know, PG, I am not opposed to all the things you're saying about doing the research and that. But what I want to see is deadlines to it. The problem is, you can't tell me you want to go to next year's COP, then you only want to start lobbying next year. If you say you want to lobby properly, you must start now. And you must then come to the position now that you want to change it. The issue doesn't make it easier. Even if you say to people, we're not going to this COP, but this is what we're coming with, whatever it may be, whatever plan it is, whatever research we've done, we must make those decisions now to start lobbying. It's no use going quickly next year, going trying to lobby one or two countries if you have to get 2/3 majority. This lobbying process has to take time. What I'm trying to say is we cannot, because we don't want to take it to this COP, if we don't want to take it to this COP because it's too close, and we want to make changes, because I'm really and truly, of all the things that have been said by all the experts, you know, there are people like Ian Player, who has been dedicated his whole life to these animals. Those people won't change their minds lightly that we should need a change in policy. And they've thrown their weight behind that change of policy. Now, I'm not saying that it's, again, they're also a particular lobby group. I'm not saying we should accept what they're saying. But what I'm saying is there are very credible people that are seeing that what we're doing at the moment is not going to be enough to stop this thing. Why? Because there's only one way to deal with it, and that is to cripple the black market. If you do not cripple the black market, you will have rhino poaching increasing. It doesn't matter what you do, you can stand on your head. It will increase all the time because they'll find ways around these things. We've heard that there's a market for these things. So really, I'm not saying what you're doing is wrong. All I'm saying is we need serious speed on this issue. And if there's a decision to not change, then let's take those decisions so that we stop this debate. And we can then have our say, whatever our say is in this committee. But if we want to change this thing and try and get a meaningful way of crippling the black market, because that's all what it is about. There is a prohibition on a particular substance, an item. That prohibition creates the scope to for the black market to then be the only market in that issue. We must either say we accept that and we're going to live with it, or hopefully your research will show some other things for us. But the point is, you see, some of that research of yours hasn't even been given out yet. And if we can't get people that can't do the research, well, then we're not going to do it. Then we need to stick on other research. So what I'm trying to say is we need to have some finality soon. You guys need to start getting us targets and deadlines on when this research is going to be done. There must be a time frame which will be done. If you do want to take it to, if there's a change of heart to another, that's fine. But that work needs to be now start done now and start finalized. We can't wait till next year. Let's leave it like that, okay?
No, it's fine, sir. Thank you very much. On the question on GMOs, I'll be quick, or compliance. There are issues to be complied with. Honorable Matebe, like there's the ease of labeling. If you trade on GMO, they must be labeled properly. There's the issues of buffering. If you plant GMO, you must buffer around them to make sure that they don't affect the ecosystems. There are issues of movement, how you move them, GMOs, across the borders.
How do you do that, man? Bees come and pollinate and they take it and go. How do you create a buffer for bees not to come in?
We did a study on exactly that, yes, about the impact on insects, how far insects can go, because there was an issue around that whole pollination of GMOs and the impact on other species. Therefore, these are all the compliance thing. And then the process gets very intense because we sit with agriculture to assess an application. Now agriculture, they look at food security. We look at environmental issues. Therefore, it becomes a very tense and aggressive engagement around approving it. Some we reject, and some get accepted. Hence, in the last 4 years, we had a no-gene program to check on the pollinators, even those who fly, who are dispersed by air. We're checking how much a pollen can fly to impact on another area. Therefore, it might say increase the buffer, the buffering, or make the buffer smaller. Therefore, there's a lot of ongoing work when you assess these applications because there's a protocol for countries to comply with when it comes to the use of GMOs. Therefore, we're trying to comply when we assess this. But again, the system is not perfect because there are NGOs who are challenging some of the approved applications. But the Department of Agriculture, the minister is the focal point. We participate in that process to make sure that we guard against the environmental issues. On co-management, the co-management is clear in the Protected Areas Act on how protected areas entities should engage communities. Therefore, we look at a specific issue around the protected area and the neighboring communities. Therefore, that's what a co-management of Dwesa Gqeba cannot be the same like a co-management of Mapungubwe. It depends on the type of stakeholders. But in the Act, there's a clear framework on how our entities should interact with communities. It's a policy matter that we're developing so that the protected areas entities can implement its of co-management. There was a question, perhaps DG, you can assist from the honorable member around the monies to Sandparks, how we support them, and how we look at their plans. The only thing I can say, when the budget is transferred, the transfer letter of the DG is specific on what money should be looked at, especially the big projects that are a pressing issue. He will say in the letter, you must use 10 million for this. Like for rhino poaching, we, this coming year, will be transferring about 8 million to Sandparks for them to look at their part of fighting rhino poaching. Therefore, there are items that have been highlighted in the transfer letter to Sandparks or to any entity.
I'm not sure that's good enough. If you're the policy structure, I mean, surely you should let them know what to, they must give you business plans or what they do.
Yes. Yeah.
So it can't just be the letter you write.
No, I was saying, Chair, the DG can elaborate on some of those.
Oh, because DG can
elaborate. Yes. In the issue of mining, the DG chair was meaning the matrix document that was developed jointly with the Department of Mineral Resources, whereby we are saying, moving forward, dealing with the conflict between mining and biodiversity, these are the areas that we must be looking, we look at. And these are the areas that we wanted the two ministers to agree on, that as departments, we agree to work on this, and then they must endorse so that there's full commitment at an official's level. Chair, the guideline, we can send to the committee chair to look at. Even if there's time, we can come and present.
There's two different things.
Yes, it's a matrix where we agree on areas of cooperation, and you have a guideline. There are two different things, Chair.
If I may add to that, around the work about mining, there's basically three areas of work that through the Outcome 10, for example, and for the process that started in 2006, we've agreed on in terms of what must happen. The first one is the agreement of mine-restricted areas. mining restricted areas which need to be informed by, amongst others, biodiversity sensitivity. And the work around mining insensitive biodiversity, the matrix, the identification of the GIS instrument and all of that relates to that. The second issue is that where mining then is not restricted but go ahead, that it happens in a way that has the least negative impact and optimizing the positive impacts of the mining. And the guidelines speak specifically to that. It's about sustainability of biodiversity and greening, etc., where mining is going ahead because it deems to be a sustainable land use in a specific area. In that regard, in Section 24J of the National Environmental Management Act, there's a provision around how guidelines that has been promulgated in terms of that provision of the Act must be taken into consideration, and you must then approve that you've applied your mind to it if you deviate from it in a decision that is taken in terms of an environmental authorization. Which brings us to the third and sticky area, which is the alignment and integration of the regulatory processes so that a mining authorization would constitute an environmental authorization for all of this to apply. I think we've very, very recently made very good progress in this regard in the advice to the ministers in this regard. And I think when we do your briefing, Minister Chair,
thank you. Freudian slip. You obviously know things I don't know. Thank you.
that you've set aside for the week where you want to do the briefing on the EIA and the mining. I think in that week we can also bring the draft guideline to you, as well as explaining to you how the matrix and the GIS work that we've done, as well as what the latest is in terms of the integration around the regulatory processes.
Okay, another addition.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. Another addition, Chair, on the Dr. Juan's question. We have a governance framework that outlines what each of the entities is supposed to do on a quarterly basis. When we then annually give a budget allocation to an entity, we then outline the conditions associated with that. For instance, I think Dr. Juan was talking about the increase in budgets of, for instance, Sanparks. That increase is an increase that is for infrastructure in national parks and some of the staff accommodation facilities. We have the plan. Sanparks, before we even approach Treasury, we get a costed plan and we assess that as a department. And basically, when we present it already, we do have the plan. And at the time of allocation, we then provide certain conditions that tighten the implementation of that plan. We may not, for instance, have given them all of the money that they would have requested, but there are certain prioritization issues that we would have stated as a department. Similarly to Isimangaliso, the funding is more for the infrastructure and also an adjustment on their baseline. And Sandy, it's also an adjustment on the baseline in terms of the management and operations of the institution. And lastly, I think weather services did not get what we requested from Treasury, which was more on the computing systems. Remember, honourable members, that we presented the modernization plan of SOARS, and therefore those new radar systems would require an upgrade also of the computer base in the office that links up to the information that or data that comes from the radar. So I think our answer is that yes, and when the entities present their threat plans, you will be able to see that the actual increase in budget is going to those areas and therefore, as a department, we do not sign off on the allocation if it is not going to be in line with that. And we have intervals where we review on a quarterly basis on performance. And when we are not happy with their reports, we refer them back before we submit them to Treasury on a quarterly basis. And lastly, I think, Chair, as the CEO was saying, in your program, in the committee program on briefings, I think we would be able to come back with a plan on this rhino management issue with clear time frames and also confirming how we are testing the current policy position, because I think we need more the empirical evidence to then make the adjustments in policy at a later point. But certainly I think what we had on a policy decision side was that we need to go to the, not this COP, but definitely we start the planning now, and I think as the Honourable Member indicated, communicate better in respect to actually what the plan is for South Africa, and include invitation to the Secretariat in respect of how we are even undergoing the investigation. But if it is ideal that we submit our proposal to the Secretariat in October, we will already know, I think, by June this year, when we have already tested the plan going forward. So I think we can schedule a briefing on that and outline the plan and hear the comments of the members in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
On that really good note, but I've got more important news here. I want you to be you are invited to the 12th World Toilet Summit. So, Mr. Matebe, I think we're going to send you as our delegate there. The 12th World Toilet Summit on the 3rd to 6th December. Please put in your diary at the ICC in Durban. For those of you that some parties, both parties that have built toilets in the felt, we can send them to the World Toilet Summit. No, it's a very important message. I want you to know this is the South African Toilet Organization. They are SATU for short. They are part of this. And it's to seek to increase combined efforts to rid Africa of open defecation practices. So there we are, folks. To say the least. All right, there were two follow-ups here. And you say, Pete, what did you say? They didn't answer your...
Yeah, my last question was not answered.
Which one?
About the action plan on the
referendum. Okay, get that one. Follow-up, Ms. Manganya.
No, Chair, it's not the follow-up. It's just the information that I want to get from the department. As we have, we are safeguarding the sea and whatever underground in the sea that is in the water. I want to know why are we owning, we just own what is inside the sea, but we don't own the land in the sea. I wanted to check that issue, because always when we talk about creating jobs and jobs, we don't talk more about the issue or the job that we can create inside the sea. As I know you've got passion on women, so getting land inside the sea, I think it will be something that is good. Thanks.
Mr. Morgan.
Thanks, Chair. I won't push the trade issue. I mean, there's a response, it's fine. But I really, and this, I promise you this isn't me grandstanding, you're the one you have to listen, but I really don't think it's a good idea, Mr. Mkhitani, to say things like there is not a crisis. I'm not asking you to say there is a crisis. I'm just saying, don't say there is not a crisis. It seriously, seriously gets the hackles up of stakeholders. I'm annoyed by it as well. The reality is that the poaching is increasing, and I'm not saying nothing is being done. There are a lot of things being done. But you have to understand that people aren't seeing results. You know, they see it in a minor place here. They'll see arrest here, arrest here, arrest here. You know, it's good, and you guys must communicate and celebrate that, and we should all compliment you on the good things that happen. But we can't go around saying things like, it is not a crisis. Because I'm sorry, there isn't an empirical study you can do which determines X number of rhinos is now a crisis. It just doesn't exist. It's always going to be a matter of opinion, quite frankly. I would imagine that 2 years ago, when 200 rhinos were killed, people said it was a crisis. Then 300, then 440, now 108 as of... I mean, our definitions are going to change and it gets worse. So please, you guys have to put a lot more work into the words that you use to communicate this particular issue. And, you know, that's what I said. The last thing on communications, because it's a relevant issue. Why is Sandpox not allowed to communicate on rhino poaching? I understand that DEA has a coordinating role. That's fine. It makes sense for you to collate rhino information. It really does. But one does not imply the other. It's fine for DEA to communicate. That's all right. But what I cannot understand is why Sandpox can't communicate. Because it's the epicenter of rhino poaching in South Africa. And let me just give you a warning as well. If you can't stop the information leaking out of Sandpox, there are rangers in Sandpox, staff in Sandpox, who as soon as a rhino is killed, phone and tell people. So let me just explain the situation to you. You guys don't look professional. When civil society, and you can moan all you want about people having information, and you can worry about who the leaks are, you can't stop it. So civil society, unofficial communication, is always a step ahead of you now. And it raises unnecessary suspicion. Because I know you guys aren't trying to necessarily hide anything. It raises unnecessary suspicion. When, for example, and we know that there is an organization keeping rhino figures. I get it every day in my parliamentary email. And the reality is that you're 2 days behind, 3 days behind. So what point does it, what does it matter? I mean, if you come back to me and say, well, it's an issue of intelligence and we need to follow the routes and we don't want to communicate, it's irrelevant because it's getting out anyway. So, you've made this decision, and I'm very concerned that Sandpox can't communicate on their own. I mean, and if you don't agree with me, I've got the media release in front of me. It was sent out by Wendy, the communications person yesterday. So why can't Sandpox communicate, and she referred all queries to Mr. Medise? So now, we now have the rhino monitor in the National Department. But the reality, and I can tell you, I mean, I can often tell you, if a rhino is killed this morning in Kruger, my SMS goes within an hour. Because people talk. So why are you centralizing all control? It's irrelevant. It can't work. Just create suspicions. Thank you.
Dr. Huang.
Gentle Chairperson, I'm also very happy Sandpox also, we can get the very soon information for the rhino poaching to the RDA member. I think it's quite good, yeah. But I quite disagree, like the chairperson you said to the DDG, it's no crisis, it's a rhino poaching. Because you just report to the committee, you give the admitting rent for the Sandpox, for the rhino. So from the BNC, you support the two or three entities. But these three entities, all that is financial allocate. I didn't see the order inside the strategic plan. So you give us a lot of information. I can't eat one time. But my sense, I want to know. You got a lot of information how you allocate the order your body to utilize. Because this one is quite confusing to me. Also, is I think the BDG in your presentation, you highlight all the rhino issue. You try answer all the questions. But my question is how you answer question for the rhino poaching in the Odalis Park. Thank you.
You know, this meeting is recorded, and somewhere here, I don't know where, but somewhere here is called in the Parliamentary Monitoring Group. I think they do minutes of what happens here. Now, in that minute, there can be two things there. The DDG on conservation said, this is not the right time to change, number one. Number two, there is no crisis around the poaching. Now, anyone that when you do make a policy decision to change something, you're going to say, well, clearly there's some confusion in this department because the DDG came and told Parliament there's no crisis. And there's definitely not a problem. And the time is not ripe to change anything or to do anything about it. So I think the thing that Mr. Morgan is saying, you missed. I think what, you know, all it does is, and I don't envy your position, DDG. I know you sitting in a position where you have to be careful and try and hold the line on things and that. But you have to be careful how we justify things. Because, I mean, there is clearly a huge crisis. There is a huge crisis. There's clearly time for us to decide what we're going to do about this. It's not the time not to do things. So what I'm just saying to you guys, be careful how we handle this thing. Even by thinking that we're trying to prepare ourselves for some future time, all the things we say in this meantime, all can get used against us at some time because all this thing will be said. Equally with us, we need to be careful what we say. At least we can be a bit more open about it because we MPs and so on. There's maybe not so much consequences to what we say than when the department says so on those issues. But I think it's something well worth heeding. You don't have to answer it, but just think about it, okay? All right, let's have those last responses and let's take the next input.
Okay, I would like to ask Albert and Mr. Mudisa to, but before I do so, I just want to contextualize the communication, whether it was a good thing for SANParks to send out a media statement in that regard is another matter altogether. Because we appreciate there is a crisis or the extent of the problem in the country, the minister last week asked that she, on rhino, she would want additional interventions and the department must play a bigger role. And there is intelligence information that does point to some aspects of the authorities, including SANParks officials, being involved in other dealings. And to this point, therefore, as a department, we are beefing up our capacity to at least coordinate certain functions. And I think Fundi may have not been able to say that because that was an instruction that we got last week. And I think in that communication, SANParks, maybe people were just throwing toys, which is not acceptable. It's not about not communicating, but I think there is supposed to be now a more coordination between SANParks and the department. And Mr. Mudise and I think Wanda had a discussion yesterday because I think that was badly handled. Because I think we can play our part, but we are not going to be the authorities that do the function on the ground, and we will still separate those responsibilities. We have not yet had an opportunity yet to meet with SANParks and clarify broadly how we are going to
undergo that coordination, even with the security agencies. The minister has spoken, she met with the Minister of Defense, and Minister of Defense has agreed to release additional capacity to other areas, not just Kruger, which means the rhino poaching problem has been appreciated also in cabinet as a serious crime issue, and not just to be left with the department. And we are currently working on a CAP memo that is going to then help us with other decisions in association with implementation of that. So I think that that is more, there is no way that the department would ever want to centralize. We are not in the business of centralizing, but even myself, I have not yet managed to get my head around exactly how we are going to run the central coordination role and with what resources, because I firstly do not have the resources in the department. And Mr. Mketeni will have to make sure that we are able to do that, including buying some equipment that we do not have ourselves and facilitating certain intelligence coordination. I think Mr. Mudise can also even highlight the recent court case that we're appearing in court with the authorities. I've written authorities across the country in terms of their engagement with not the Taiwanese, Vietnamese clients, and we have sort of embargoed the direct engagement unless otherwise there is going to be a serious. We think if it's a diplomatic issue, we are prepared to lose it in court, but at least we would have a high moral ground in respect to the kind of message that we are sending as a department and as a and as South Africa. And
thanks, DG. Honourable members, I think just to expand further on the DG's points, the plan is not so much to, as it's alleged in the media, to control the release of statistics or to stop the release of statistics or figures. But I think there's a realization that the SANParks is one of a number of entities that play a pivotal role in that space. Government, as a central coordinating force, should be able to bring together all the affected and relevant parties in ensuring that communication is streamlined, but also we, on an ongoing basis, provide regular feedback to general population. The aim was never to say we don't want SANParks to talk. We want to make sure that we all communicate from the same hymn sheet, because if it's done in a very haphazard fashion, the likelihood is that you then have conflicting figures being released on numbers of rhinos poached. So we need to make sure we speak from the same hymn sheet. We are clearly going to have to work together with SANParks in making sure that on an ongoing basis we do communicate. We have a plan to have ongoing media briefings. For an example, I was in communication with Minister last night. We looked at something for this Sunday as well. So it's not to a blackout. It's not to control the flow of information. It's to make sure that we all speak from the same hymn sheet and we all are saying the same things as well on an ongoing basis, cognizant of the fact that there is a need out there to ensure that we keep South Africans abreast of the ongoing developments, whether it's around the law enforcement elements or the elements in terms of policy reviews and diplomatic engagements, whether it's Vietnam, whether it's Thailand, whether it's China, or whether it's any of the, whether Mozambique, for instance. So we aim to make sure that on an ongoing basis, Chair, we brief South Africans, and when a minister comes back from France, that plan would be clearly discussed with her, and we can surely share it with members.
We're running in time problems now, but
we will have to work closely with provinces, and I'm sure it's something that minister at MINMEC level will also raise, because it's an area that's been addressed at MINMEC as well, the issue of rhino poaching. So we will need to pull together everyone so that we, the information that's released, for instance, it's information that represents the picture in terms of the scourge of rhino poaching. So there will be no one excluded from this exercise. And I think part of the plan would also mean engagement with the stakeholders so that on an ongoing basis, when decisions of this nature are taken, there is no sense that government is trying to black out the flow of information. I think we could have done it much better, maybe, but I think we've learned our lessons. Thank you.
Ms. Mangani?
Yes, he covers me a little bit, but I was saying, Chair, the kind of the information that you are talking about, you should have it with your center, because people who are working there will still send the information. Even the rangers will tell the people, so many rhinos have been killed, even though although are not reported. So I'm saying, just make sure that you fast track what you say. Thank you.
What are there were more questions? Quickly.
Chair, the one on land claims. We had a plan with the Land Claims Commission that we're using in the last 2 years. But since they have restructured, most commissioners left. Today, there's a workshop between our department and the new Land Claims Commissioners to develop a new plan. Therefore, there will be a new one, honorable member, soon. Chair, the use of the word extinction sometimes do want someone to talk to numbers. That was that context. I will leave it there, Chair, on a number of crises and the use of the word that we're facing extinction. Thank you, Chair.
But you see, again, all the things you're doing now, we're trying to get proper messages out, which is correct. Why are you doing it? You're doing it because there's a reason to do it. And the fact of the matter is, the mere fact is that we have started doing things to flatten off it somehow, but that's still not the answer to the issue. At the end of the day, you have to decide, this government has to decide, whether we're going to leave a black market intact or whether we're going to try and fight the black market. That's the policy decision. And in the process, there's a crisis that we're addressing. Okay. We've used a lot of time on this, but this is one of some interest for us because we like Sandbox and we like Isismangaliso. Can we quickly jump to oceans, which I also like? I like the sea. Yes, ma'am.
To indicate to Honorable Member Mangani that your question about the sea will be answered when the oceans present.
Okay.
How they define the coastal zone and what activities are allowed and so on.
So what we're looking for here is a diagram showing all these obligations. Secondly, we're looking for plans and a program for our rhinos issues. And then thirdly, there's a whole lot of stuff under around mining, which hopefully will flow into that public hearing we'll have in middle June. Okay, everyone happy now? Oceans and whatever. Who's responsible for oceans?
Thank you, Chair. I will do the presentation on oceans and coasts. If I can have the first and the second slide, the presentation will follow the outline. I'll first of all talk to the DEAR goal that we are addressing, and I'll talk to the purpose of the work of the branch in oceans and coasts. Then we will look at the strategic objectives that we have, and I will quickly go through the legislation that is relevant to oceans and coasts, a little bit on the structure of the branch, and we'll deal with achievements, challenges, and priorities for 2012-2013, and I'll just give a brief list of international agreements that we are party to, and lastly, Chair, we will give a flavor of what is coming out of a two-year process of development of an oceans policy. Next, please. The dear goal that we are addressing is...
Don't worry those things.
Okay, the oceans and coast objectives are those four, Chair:
management framework, strengthening of science program.
Don't worry those things.
Okay.
That's all just words and ana. Get to the meat.
Okay. First.
Hey, you don't have to jump so far. I mean, look at your. Hey. Look at least at the chart, the diagram. Tell us quickly that diagram. What is it?
That diagram shows, Chair, that we have four chief directories. The first one is integrated coastal management with three directories. The second one is ocean conservation, also with three directories. The third one is oceans and coastal research, which has two directories. And the new one we call ocean and coast specialist monitoring, and it will have two directories.
Next.
As far as the indicators are concerned, Chair, the first indicator is an ocean management strategy that we need to develop. Chair, a draft green paper is being prepared and it will be available to start consultation post 31 March 2012. Somewhat a misplaced indicator there, the relief voyages to the Antarctica and islands. We do three voyages per year and these have been done. Then the third indicator under that objective is development of a national coastal management program guideline. These are the guidelines to say how we are going to implement the new Coastal Management Act. It will be implemented in terms of a national coastal program as well as provincial coastal programs. As a first step, we are developing guidelines to develop a national coastal program. The fourth one is a development of recreational water quality guidelines. And Chair, this doesn't actually clarify what is intended here. What is intended is for us to make sure that inshore water in the ocean does not endanger public health. So what we then need to do, working with our sister department, Water Affairs, is to make sure that the water that comes from land-based sources, which eventually reaches the oceans, is of a standard that doesn't endanger, it doesn't cause pollution or health problems. Then there are local oil pollution emergency response plans. We've got old plans that were developed some time ago, and we're taking the trouble of updating them, and we should finish updating six of these, two additional ones, so that we've got six that have been updated by the end of the year. Chair, estuaries, of course, are a very important environment, and we have developed an estuary management protocol, which we have put into the government system. It was approved that we can go out for consultation by the economic cluster of DGs. Then, Chair, you did raise an issue about the coastline that will be covered by MPAs. South Africa does meet the international targets. In other words, the targets that were set by CBD. We have 13% of the coastal environment, of the coastal ocean, partially protected. 9% of it has full protection. And we have recently, or the minister has recently proclaimed a protected marine protected area, Amatole in Eastern Cape, and we are hoping that we'll be able by 31 March to have proclaimed the Prince Edward Marine Protected Area. As far as the second objective is concerned, baseline assessment of ocean and coastal biodiversity. Again, Chair, this needs a little bit of explanation in that we have never, as a country, carried out a systematic biological survey of your marine fauna and flora. And this is what we want to start next year. What the little we know about the biodiversity in the ocean is information that we have obtained when we're doing a fishing survey and so on. So it will be...
Just read that line to me. It's cut off there and it's cut off on my slide. What does it say?
Sorry. It says protected marine species management. Species management. Sorry, myself, I lost it too, Chair.
Okay.
It is protected marine species management, and we had targeted to develop 3 species management plans, which we have done, and we, in future, we would want to do an additional management plan for protected species. What are the protected species? The protected species, Chair, are those that we believe are vulnerable, like your sharks, your whales, your dolphins, or penguins. Those are the animals that we target. And the question can be asked, why do we target those? We target those, Chair, because they are the so-called top predators, and they are the animals that tell us something about the health of the system. It is not necessary to look at everything that is out in the ocean. By just looking at what is happening to seabirds, to dolphins, to whales and sharks, we get an indication of the ecosystem health. That is why we're singling them out there. Then, as far as the second objective is concerned on science programs, we want for the first time to do a systematic survey of what is in the ocean environment. Go beyond what we have gleaned when we're doing fishery surveys. Okay, then we deal with estimates of population numbers. Of course, we estimate the numbers of these organisms in order to be able to see, to perceive what the ecosystem health looks like. We look at seabirds, we look at seals, numbers, we looked at shark and whales and develop methods of assessing them. Chair, you can imagine how difficult it is to assess the numbers of migratory animals. Our right whales come from the Southern Ocean, but we need to have a way of estimating their abundance. Their abundance, the same as sharks, they are all migratory animals.
Just put up toll roads, you'll know where everyone is.
Then, Chair, the other indicator here was a number of peer-reviewed scientific publications. We planned to produce 22. We are on 18 now, and we're still hoping that we'll be able to meet that 22. But of course, Chair, this is not entirely in our hands because it depends on when a publication is accepted for publication by a journal. Next one, please. Then the third objective, the first indicator is we produce a state of the oceans report, and that we've done successfully, Chair, and this information is fed into the South Africa Environment Outlook. Then we also want to develop an online information system that would be accessible to stakeholders. We have looked at a needs analysis, which of course is difficult to complete given that we're still developing an oceans policy. As soon as the oceans policy, at least post 31 March, we would have an indication of what are the parameters that should be included in this information system. Lastly, on this objective, Chair, we would like to have functioning coastal and deep ocean observation and monitoring network. Now, what we plan to do this year is to deploy 4 buoys. Now, buoys are equipment that is put in the ocean to automatically, so to speak, measure ocean conditions and send information to a computer in our department for us to get to know what is happening in the ocean all the time. Now, we had planned to deploy four of these, and we have only been able to deploy two. This is what we attribute to capacity constraints, because we need to have adequate technicians who are going to service those things that are out in the ocean. And it is proving a little more difficult than we initially thought. Then, the last objective, Chair, it talks to the Benguela Current Commission, where we are drafting a treaty together with Angola and Namibia. And the first draft of the treaty has been completed, and we hope it will be signed by Minister in May. And if that happens, then we will start a parliamentary process towards ratification of the treaty. Chair, there is also in the pipeline ratification of Annex 6 to the Protocol on Environmental Protection to the Antarctica. Now, we did send the annex to the cluster, international cluster, last week, and it was approved, so that document will now go to cabinet for approval. Lastly, Chair, specialized assets and infrastructure for research. The polar vessel was a major item that we've been involved in, and we are glad that that vessel has been produced or has been constructed according to budget and is coming on time as per the contract that was signed in 2009. Next, please. International agreements, Chair, I have listed there the principal ones, the Antarctic Treaty, the Intergovernmental Oceanographic Commission of UNESCO, the Commission for the Conservation of Antarctic Marine Living Resources, the Agreement on Albatrosses and Petrels, the International Whaling Commission, London Convention and Protocol. Thanks, Chair. That would be the end of the phase one of our presentation. The next few slides cover the oceans policy. Should I go ahead, Chair?
Yes.
Okay. The our activities in the ocean have in the past been managed by the Marine Living Resources Act of 1998. And about 2 years ago, the then Marine and Coastal Management Branch, following the presidential restructuring directive, separated fishing and consumptive use of resources from oceans and coast conservation. Next. The branch then looked at only oceans conservation rather than your consumptive things. And if we go back into defining jurisdiction in the oceans, Chair, we recognize or we observe that the ocean is the last commons, and we list what used to happen in the 1700s, and lastly, an important issue is the extended shelf claim that we have submitted to the United Nations. Next. Chair, the red line indicates current EEZ, current economic exclusive zone of South Africa, where South Africa has the prerogative to use. And then South Africa also has jurisdiction over two islands in the Southern Ocean, and they are shown by that red ring at the bottom. And it also, those islands have their own economic exclusive zone. What the white lines are showing is how it will look like if the United Nations approves of our shelf claim that we have submitted. So as you can see, Chair, there, it will be a lot more ocean that South Africa will be privy to than what we have today. Now, there was a question as to how we use the land underneath the sea. The answer, Honorable Member, is that whatever is on land below the sea, from the shore 200 miles up, 200 nautical miles out, belongs to South Africa. So South Africa has the prerogative to use that for mining, for gas, for oil, and from our point of view, also to get important substances. What do I mean? What are these important substances? There are a lot of medicinal plants and animals that are in the ocean. So if South Africa were to do the research that is needed to understand what is in the water and also on the land below the sea for that matter, then we would be able to use those for economic development. Next, please. Chair, as we were developing this oceans policy 2011 and 2012, we did a few things. First of all, we looked at what the various ocean stakeholders were doing, whether they are Department of Transport or Department of Agriculture. We did an analysis of that. That is shown in the first circle there. Then this was followed up by us analyzing 12 national ocean policies of different countries, whether it was Norway or India. We did a study of those. And then we looked as well in the third circle, we looked at the international agreements that South Africa has signed and examined the implications of those. And lastly, we've looked at the national policies of the various other entities in South Africa. The conclusion that we reached was that management of commercial sectors operating in the ocean does exist, but this management functions to advance the interests of the sectors. For instance, it may be shipping, it may be mining. We observed further that no policy framework, however, is there for conservation and protection of the oceans. Next. We then looked at what are the policy gap consequences, and we recall the oil spill that was in the news in the Gulf of Mexico and observed that South Africa is operating in the same policy vacuum as the USA when that happened. We believe there is a need to improve how we can respond to things such as the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. Secondly, we have no risk atlases available to tell us which areas of the coast are vulnerable to storms and storm surge activity. And lastly, we observe that we don't even have a national index of biodiversity vulnerability in the ocean. For instance, we don't know the real situation with coral reefs. We don't know what ocean acidification, what areas it could affect most, and so on and so on and so on. And these issues will be covered when we do have a policy. Next, what are the objectives then of that policy? We say that it is conservation, protection, and developing of stewardship. And secondly, we would want to contribute to spatial planning, and we would like to maintain and enhance ocean goods and services. What is shown there in yellow chair, we're just indicating that the threat to the ocean as technology is advancing is going to improve to the extent that there's going to be a lot more activity in the ocean than we have today. So there are emerging uses that we need to be able to deal with. Next, please. Okay, there we just classify the oceans and good services, and we can skip that.
What are the South African ocean policy performance areas? There are just four of them, Chair. We would like to describe the ocean ecosystem adjacent to South Africa. We would like to describe the human impact. We would like to have something to say on sustainable development and ocean stewardship. And lastly, we would like to encourage integrated ocean management. Next. What are the major issues that are coming out in the policy document? What is coming out is that there is a need to develop a repository of ocean management information. This information, Chair, exists in the databases of various organizations, various government departments, but we think there's a need to bring this to the center so that there is a central page that keeps this information. Secondly, we think that there's a need for improved knowledge and understanding of the oceans, and as a first, we are suggesting that there be spatial mapping of the ocean. Thirdly, we would like it, or the policy will recommend supporting partner departments in their environmental stewardship roles, and fourthly, to facilitate better coordination across departments in international ocean forums. Chair, this matter was discussed during the biodiversity presentation when we had Fundi, and we agree that we need to coordinate better what we say about oceans in various government departments. Lastly, we would like to facilitate integrated ocean spatial planning. And I do want to read those three there, where we look at aggregated and accumulated impacts on oceans. What happens, Chair, is that mining will do its little bit, agriculture and fisheries will do their little bit, and mining will do its own. But there is no one, we believe, other than the Department of Environment, who can then look at the aggregated and accumulated impact of all these on the oceans. Do what with that information? We should be able to then set ocean ecosystem thresholds. In other words, we say, you know, this pollutant should not go over a certain limit. And if it goes over that limit, some action needs to be taken. And lastly, Chair, understanding the role of the oceans in weather and climate. Thanks.
Thank you. It's clear that a lot of work needs to be done in this branch. I didn't realize that we know so little and we've done so little in this area. So it's a little bit of a shock for me. I think what's important is that we get some finality on these policy issues. That, you know, you set deadlines for finishing all this policy stuff. I mean, there's so many policy issues that are outstanding. It's huge. Is there any issues, Dr. Huang?
Thank you, Chairperson. Regarding for the ONC, is a procurement for this polar research vessel. I think it is very with 1.2 billion rand for this new vessel. I think you will be complete the final payment for this year. I think it's over 632 million rand. I'd like to know this, if this new vessel is a complete construct, so you can arrange for this committee member go to visit this new vessel, because it's quite high value. Also, the chairperson, I'd like to know this aging one, this older vessel, how you deal with this older one. You are selling this older one, or you are contributed to the school for education? And this is how much for this value for this older vessel? How you will be deal with this? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I agree with the department that the policy must be formulated so that at the end of the day, we must know what we have and what belongs to us and what doesn't belong to us. And then we must also make sure that because we are only harboring the ships that are passing, coming and parking at our sea, but we don't have the specialized ships that we can also monitor. I think the department have a huge things to do because they need to have also the people who will assist with those skills, not always taking from outside. Those people must leave the skills that they are having when they come to us so that we must understand more. What I'm trying to say is just I agree because there is a lot to do in the sea. It's not like outside the sea where you can see everything when you want it. It's a lot of challenge. And then if the department doesn't assist, it's going to be a challenge even for people who are not understanding the sea to can do some business. Because what we would like to see is to create jobs. So we need to go for that market. We must also go into that specific market, being told by other countries to say we are doing 1, 2, 3 in the sea. So we must also try and go that route. Thank you. Check.
Thank you. Any other issues? Okay, answer please.
Thank you, Chair, honorable members. Chair, we're working as fast as we can in order to bring forth that policy document as soon as possible. It is already looking like...
How long have we been a democracy?
Chair, a long time. And maybe I need to explain this. What has happened, Chair, was the issues of the oceans and conservation were dealt with by then Marine and Coastal Management. And the then Marine and Coastal Management had as a dominant issue the fishing issue. So that tended to get us to somewhat forget, if I can put it that way, or rather not ignore, but we didn't put as much effort as we should have in issues of ocean conservation and biodiversity protection. So it is, I agree with you, this is something that we should have had a long time ago, but we didn't. But also, Chair, without being defensive, we note that even countries like the USA are only now scrambling and producing an oceans policy. Same as France. France produced it only last year. So
they have to can invade everywhere, so they don't need policies. They just take it. They take what they want, they abuse what they want, so it doesn't matter. We don't have that luxury. I must tell you, I'm a bit shocked that the Department of Environment, 18, 19 years into our democracy, doesn't have a policy on the oceans, which is the most basic policy. I'm just shocked. I mean, I don't care what the reasons are. I just don't know how we have to bring this thing to finality quickly. CEO, this can't go on like this. What it means is that we've got a department that deals with one of our biggest natural resources that does it in a policy vacuum. That's what it means. And when we complain about local governments building houses right on the beaches and on the wrong places where there's weather things, well, the reason for it is because no one cares. No one's got a policy for it. So, yeah, let's leave it at that. Let's not be defensive. You must just know that this chairperson is absolutely shocked.
Okay. No, Chair, okay. Then there was a question about the new vessel. I think honorable members will, I don't know if I can say that, but the vessel arrives on the 3rd of May. And I think Dr. Huang, honorable members can then get into the vessel and take a look at it. The older vessel, the plan is not to sell it. The plan is to transfer it to the Department of Transport, who have indicated an interest in using it. But that's the plan as of now. But it is, the plan is not to sell. The issue of monitoring what is happening along our coast is, of course, a very important matter on us, remember, in that I've just been told almost 15,000 vessels go around the Cape a year. And of course, all the time, there's always a risk of something going wrong. And we do monitor, of course, using aircraft. We do monitor the ocean environment to see who is doing what and who could be spilling oil or any other thing. So there is already an existing monitoring activity. About skills, well, remember, I cannot emphasize it more, that South Africa needs to develop those skills pretty quick. And as you have pointed out, the ocean environment is very difficult to work in. It's very expensive to work in, but also difficult, and we need to quickly develop skills to do that. Creation of jobs, we have observed that other countries now are able to exploit economic, they are able to make investments and exploit certain things that are in the ocean that we are not been yet able to do. And we agree a lot of effort still needs to be put into us understanding first what is out there and how it works in order for us to be able to exploit. Chair, I think I've covered.
I think so. Mr. Huang, we're running out of time rapidly. What, is it a vitally important issue?
No, Chairperson, I just follow up with his answer to the question. All the vessels will be transferred to the Department of Transport. What's the reason of transfer to the Department of Transport? Because they have the budget of purchase order while needed to transfer. Because they what they use, what's maintenance for in future for this all the vessels. We want to know.
Chair, the vessel at 32 years old is no longer able to get insurance to go into the ice in the Southern Ocean. So the thinking in the department was that rather than trying to sell it, where maybe we wouldn't realize as much money, it would benefit South Africa more if the vessel was used by the Department of Transport. To do what? One of the things they want to do is to train sea people, seafarers, for South Africa. Chair, the situation, probably not my business to talk about it, but South Africa does not have seafaring people. And other nations like Philippines and others have a number of trained seafarers, and the aim of the Department of Transport is to develop that skill in South Africa.
Okay, thank you. You know what your job is. I next year don't want to hear any of this stuff. The policies must be finished. They must be drafted. Well, he says his vessel is visiting here on the 3rd of May. So, 3rd of May, you may pop in there, get a stowaway inside there.
So, that's my private thing. You mustn't listen to the committee.
It's a weak spot. Okay. Can we quickly have the third input? Who's giving the third input?
Thanks, Chair. I'll be giving the third input. Shama Barish.
Go quickly, cut through all the...
Okay, next slide. Thank you. Chair, that's the new structure. We've got four chief directors there. Currently, there's only one chief director in place. The three proposed chief directors...
The restructuring of this department is funny. Every single one has now got four chief directors. Isn't that funny? Doesn't that tell you something?
There's lots of work in this department, Chair.
It tells me a lot of things. It tells me fiefdoms have been created. That's what it tells me. All it does with so many chief directors is it fragments each unit. That's what it does. Creates extra work. In any case, you've done it without our blessing. You did it on your own. So go ahead on your own.
Okay, Chair. Under each of those directorates, we've got the chief directors, we've got the directorates listed. Next slide. In terms of achievements, in terms of achievements, Chair, for the 2011-2012 year, there were three targets set basically, which were not achieved. The reason for that is that the industry waste management plans are under review still, and we're hoping that in the 2012-2013 years to address those issues. In terms of the percentage of households with basic waste collection, we've got 59% of households that currently have basic waste collection. Then in terms of the percentage of increase in waste management spend, the target was to establish the baseline, and in terms of doing that, we've looked at our integrated industry waste management plans and reviewed them in order to establish a baseline, and I think we've appointed a service provider to also help establish the baseline. In terms of the number of hectares of land remediated, the target was to bring Section 8 of the Waste Management Act into effect. In this regard, there was quite a bit of work done. There was an MOU developed with the Department of Water Affairs. The regulations have been developed in this regard and also consulted. Then in terms of the number of unlicensed waste disposal sites, the target was to develop an action plan. In terms of that, and to see how many we could license, we licensed 120 or looked at 120 license applications for the year, but there's still a challenge in that there's still quite a few that are unlicensed, but we've surveyed 341 of those. Next. In terms of our targets for 2012-2013, there's quite a few or quite a bit of work that needs to be done still, Chair. There's a number of waste management instruments that we're going to develop and implement. There's 25 of them, Chair. I don't know if you want me to go through all of them.
No.
Okay. But basically, those are the issues that are going to be dealt with in terms of this particular
fund.
What
is our responsibility here? I mean, this thing has been given to human settlements. So what is our... We've now created this huge unit here with four chief directors. What is it we are targeting or we're trying to do?
Well, Chair, there's still a lot of policy work that needs to be done, regulations that need to be written. There's a lot of activities that related to waste that we'll need to regulate and ensure that we actually reduce...
The regulations, waste. The laws, I understand, but what do you say we have to regulate? Regulate what?
Well, Chair, I mean, we set the policy framework for waste in the country, essentially. And we assist, or we would be assisting the local authorities in terms of actually dealing with waste better. So there's a whole range of work that still needs to be done in terms of how they cost their cost model for municipalities, those kind of things, how they deal with their waste at their landfill sites, separation of waste. There's a whole range of issues where we, as the national department, would need to provide guidance to the provinces and local authorities.
Now, those things that you've listed there, the 25.
Yes.
Have they been drafted? They exist, or they must be drafted?
There's some of them that are in draft. There's some that would need to be drafted. I've included the international stuff in the list as well. So there are some that are in process already, and there are some that will obviously...
You then break it up. The ones that exist have to be implemented. The ones that are, have to be drafted must be drafted. It's two different processes. I mean, if I look at that list now, what do I understand from it?
Chair, I'm going to ask...
I'm going to ask
my expert to just give us an account of which are...
That's not the point. The point is...
You want them broken
for
up.
For us here now, for us, as policymakers, we don't know. I mean, you should have made them separate that have to be drafted. So each one of those is a separate job that has to be drafted, like the previous unit did. A green paper, norms and standards, and that which you have to be implemented, and then what targets flow from that.
Okay, we can do it.
Otherwise, you don't understand this. No one can understand.
Chair, can I get Mpoh to just expand on it quickly?
No. You're going to have to redo this.
Okay.
Chair, if I may make a suggestion. That relates also to the implementation of the integrated waste management strategy, which is also on your list of outstanding briefings, because this is the implementation of the integrated waste management strategy, which is the strategy for implementing the Waste Act, which came into effect in 2008-2009. So that might be the opportunity to unpack that in terms of what the status is. But my understanding is that all of these would need to be finalized for implementation by the end of the next financial year in terms of chapter
I think they must
four.
Go and redraft and they must do each one of them separately. Because the one is, if it must be drafted, that is a goal. If it is drafted, then there's certain targets that have to be met out of that. Or there are no targets. I mean, I don't know, what job we want. But to present it like this is just... it's just no use. All right, go to the next slide.
Okay, what we'll do then is when we present the waste management strategy, we'll break them down into exactly where they are in terms of process. Okay, then in terms of the targets for 2012-2013, we're looking at investigating a Schedule C for the waste management activity list. Essentially what this would entail would be looking at activities that would not need to be licensed in terms of the Waste Act. Then in terms of the number of households with basic waste collection, we're looking to increase that to 67%. Also for the target for next year in terms of land remediated, we want to do a land database development. Then also, I mentioned the tariff model for refuse removal in terms of local authorities and that kind of thing. We want to develop a full cost accounting guideline for municipalities and ensure that it's implemented in the next year. The target for the number of households benefiting from waste collection initiatives, we're looking at 35,000 households. And then also at 13 buyback and or recycling facilities being created. Next slide. In terms of the international obligations, Chair, the first one, we are aiming to include 10 new persistent organic pollutants in terms of the Stockholm Convention and to revise the National Implementation Plan to include these new pollutants. Then in terms of the National Implementation Plan for the Montreal Protocol, we're looking at finalizing a sector plan for the phase-out of HCFCs and also to augment the current management plan for methyl bromide with new data that we have. And then in terms of the ozone-depleting substances, we're looking at formulating regulations for that and also updating the Montreal Training Manual for customs officials. As far as the National Implementation Plan for the Stockholm Convention goes, our aim is to adopt the National Multi-Stakeholder Chemicals Management Work Program and to commence with that drafting in the following financial years. In terms of the Rotterdam Convention, we're looking at updating the National Action Plan by setting new targets, consulting on these new revised targets, and then eventually finalizing them in the next year. Can I continue with the next one, Chair, or do you want to take questions on this one?
No, go ahead.
The next branch that I'm going to be dealing with is legal authorizations and compliance. The next slide. That's also a breakdown of what the structure looks like or is going to look like in terms of the proposed restructuring. You will see that this branch has 5 chief directors instead of 4. Currently, there's 2 that are filled and there's 3 vacancies. And it basically gives you an indication of the directorates falling under each of the chief directorates. Next slide. In terms of our achievements for 2011-2012, we had a percentage of all complaints received and incidents processed. Our target was 75%. The target that we actually achieved there was 94%. Then we had a target for facilities inspected of 70. We actually managed 70 on the dot. The percentage of administrative enforcement actions resulting in compliance, our target was 75% there, which we didn't reach. We actually managed 60% only. In terms of the number of EMIs, excluding grade 5 EMIs that attended specialized training courses, the target there was 19%, which we've actually reached. And in terms of the local authority EMIs, we've trained 50 of them, which was on target as well. Next. In terms of the NEMA Chapter 5 amendments, to address the shortfalls in terms of the legislation, the target was to gazette the amended act, and currently it's before Cabinet for consideration. NEMLA.
Is this NEMLA?
Yeah, before the committee.
Before Parliament?
Yes.
Been introduced now?
Yes. In terms of the percent of applications for environmental authorization finalized, our target was 88%, provided that we didn't receive more than 400. We actually only managed 76% there, but that was because we received a large number of additional applications in relation to specifically the renewable energy. The performance indicator for environmental assessment and management strategy was to be finalized. The strategy is completed. We're currently busy with the draft sub-theme reports and completing those.
If I then report these things, Corey, when you say completed, it means it's completed. You say it's being completed, then it's being completed.
It's actually being completed, and the sub-themes are still...
It's a completely wrong reflection of what's going on. I mean, if I take this document later, because I can't forget, remember all this stuff, now go and read there, okay, draft theme reports are completed, but it's still being completed. That's why draft sub-theme. You guys must be more accurate, eh? Especially this unit. You guys
do
the legal stuff, for God's sake. You can't be so inaccurate.
We'll do that, Chair.
Oceans can be inaccurate. They've got nothing.
We'll do that, Chair.
They've got a drop of information, those fellows. They just know there's an ocean out there. But the lawyers, I mean, you guys are so inaccurate. Yeah. Go ahead.
In terms of the number of environmental management instruments developed and implemented, there was one EMF set as a target. We, in fact, had 2 EMFs finalized during the year. There were 6 provincial EMFs that were approved by the minister. And then there were also 3 letters signed by the minister concurring that the provinces do additional EMFs. In terms of the number of officials trained in environmental impact management, we had 50 trained, our target was 50 rather, and we had 50 that were actually trained. In terms of the integrated and coordinated regulatory system for environmental management of mining, I think that was touched on in the biodiversity and conservation presentation as well. And we're in the process of finalizing that. Next slide.
You're awaiting minister's decision. Does that mean you've got a proposal of how to integrate, or do you still have to draft the integration?
Chair, there is a proposal. There's been a workshop already in terms of how we actually do it and the options and those kind of things. And we recently had a meeting with the Department of Minerals where it was decided on a way forward and what's actually going to happen in terms of how we take the function forward.
So there's a proposal?
Yes, there is, Chair.
Okay.
Just in terms of the infrastructure development, we're looking at the development of environmental management frameworks where we're identifying areas for, or rather critical development areas that are suffering from increasing development pressure, pressures rather. The department also intends to initiate the development of regulations to legislate the development of strategic environmental assessments, and we're also working towards the development of a strategic environmental management framework for energy applications. I mentioned earlier that we received quite a number of them, and our feeling is that we need to take a strategic approach to all these renewable energy applications. Okay, that's just a sketch to show the EMFs and where they are currently. Next slide. In terms of our targets for 2012, this is in terms of compliance and enforcement. The performance indicator there is the percentage of deer complaints and incidents processed and investigated. Our target for the next financial year is 85%. In terms of the number of facilities inspected, we are increasing that to 85 for the year. And then in terms of the percentage of administrative enforcement actions resulting in compliance, the target there is 75%. We're hoping, Chair, that we'll investigate and finalize criminal dockets, 18 of them, for prosecution in the next financial year. And then in terms of the percentage of EQP-related complaints, notices, and directives in relation to which reactive inspections will be conducted, we're looking there at 75% as a target as well. It should be finalized by March 2013, not 12, Chair. Sorry about the inaccurate. And then in terms of the number of compliance inspections against deer exclusive functions, there we're looking at a target of 29. Essentially, those are the ones that are sort of specific to the National Department. Next, our performance indicator for the percentage of applications for environmental authorization that are finalized, there the target we've increased slightly to 88%. Once again, it's provided that we don't receive more than 400 applications because of our current capacity in that regard. Then in terms of the number of environmental management instruments, we're looking at hopefully one additional EMF developed next year. And then in terms of the environmental assessment and management strategy, we want that finalized and implemented in the next year. 100% of the target is 100% of the strategy completed. That includes all the sub-theme reports and that. And we want that going to the project steering committee for their final comments. So we are hoping that it will be implemented next year. Also in terms of the percentage now of waste license applications finalized within the time frames, there the target's been set for 95%. And then we also want to decrease the number of unlicensed waste disposal sites. Next slide. This is the legal section. They propose to deal with all litigation matters that they receive. Also, in terms of PIA, similarly, there is no choice. There's a legislative obligation to deal with all those applications. In terms of the request for legislative support, they set a target of 90% for the year. And then in terms of other support, opinions, vetting of contracts, licenses, authorizations, etc., their target there is 85% of all those that are received for the year. Sorry, Chair?
That's a funny target. I mean, you would expect it 100%. You get contracts and things to do, you finish them. You don't let them stand over to the next year. Any case, it's your target, you go ahead.
And then the percentage of appeals received dealt with within prescribed time frames, 85% of those. Chair, the difficulty with some of these things is that they are ongoing. I mean, if anything, I would have expected them to put the litigation target as probably a lesser target because that's an ongoing target, basically. It's a moving target, in other words. Next, that's it. Thank you, Chair.
Mm-hmm. hatred in the department is funny. I hope you remember this, but performance bonus time, huh? That these people are reported yet inaccurately. You go and redo this report, please. The waste part of it must be more clearly spelled out. Because waste is really a home settlement, then we must be very clear that this is your job. You're going to draft the policy. And when is your date, the cut-off date for it? There's no date yet. It's like that oceans. They've been going for 19 years. They're just floating on the ocean. I don't want the legal officer now to float. You must get targets there for us so that, I mean, we draft the policy by this time. And all those policies should have been drafted already, so they're vital. They're urgent deadline. Even if it's quick guidelines that go out, one can always then supplement. But if there's a vacuum in terms of policy for waste, you can't blame local government if they're not doing it. So if there is at least a document. So that, I need those things much more clearly, you know, from you guys. And then I want accuracy on this other part of the document. If something's done, it's completed. If it's been completed, then it's not completed. So you must be much more accurate, okay? And then, you know, take a leaf out of your colleagues. I mean, they do colorful things. Green, orange, and red. Put them up there so it's clearer what you're doing. Okay. All right. Questions, inputs, start there. Ms. Dr. Huang, Matebe, yourself. Get your wing. Get your surname for a minute. Sorry. Apologies. And Ms. Manganya.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think this... this short presentation is also a surprise to me. This chemical and the waste measurement, you have the four chief director, but it's a three chief director is vacancy. Even there is the last one is a chemical management. No chief director, no director. I don't know how you can achieve for his target. So, I'd like to know from this department, you need four chief directors, then you only one chief director, other three is a vacancy. How you deal with this business? And also for your other unit, same story, you have the five chief directors but two store vacancy. How long you will be fit up for all these vacancies? Is what's problem? Is it difficult to get this position? So your target is like this one is only for 59%, 45%. So depending to your leadership and your structure, still have the big trouble. So I'd like to know from this unit. Thank you.
DJ, you must just think about all these new chief directors have been created. Just tell me just now how much more it costs. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm just, you know, each unit has now got four chief directorates. Funny, all of them are like four units. And one of them push it up to five. It's very interesting to me. You take your work, you divide it, you see other units. Just tell me how much a bit more extra money this is costing us. I know you guys did the restructuring at your baby and so on, and we weren't part of it, but I'm just finding it interesting now to see each unit is getting so many chief directorates. Each one of them have got two, three vacancies because they're so new. They've got vacancies in those. So what it means is I can see already all these directors in your department are now all going to become chief directors because they're the ones that are going to apply. So we're now going to have a lot of chiefs in these departments, all the moving up from the directors. So it looks like you guys have kept created a nice little empire here. Lots of chief directors. I don't think there's a single department in government that's got so many chief directors. Very interesting to see today. I'm very fascinated by this. Each unit now has got four or five chief directors. You know how much bucks they get paid? All going to get promoted from directors, then all the deputy directors are going to become directors, and then you fill up the bottom. Very fascinating, huh? Yeah. Okay, Mr. Matebe. Fascinating things happening in this department.
How long
what?
Get that thing closer to you there, Baba.
Waste disposal sites at various municipalities. Because why I'm saying this, in my municipality, in the town of Groblersdam, they just chose a piece of land next to the main road and fence it off. And this big municipal truck come and offload this waste there. And then they will burn it. And then a thick smoke will come from that place, and then it causes a lot of accident on the main road. Last year, only 2 people died on that road because of that thick smoke coming from that waste disposal site. And I asked one of the councillors as to whether do they have an environmental officer in the municipality. They seem not even to know what is an environmental officer. So how do you really make sure that these municipalities still comply with these regulations of yours? And how do you monitor them? Another question is, I'm interested to know as to how this database of national contaminated land was developed. Because it seems to me that you don't have the capacity, or you are not serious about capacitating the municipalities in order to can deal with these issues. How now do you develop this database when the municipality don't have the capacity and we don't seem to be assisting them to do that? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. If I could link the two together, I would appreciate that. First of all, on your slide, under waste management, slide 3, you are talking about 120 applications were processed and 341 unlicensed sites surveyed. I'd like to know the status of the 341 and when can we expect for those sites to be licensed. Specifically, because under the second presentation, you are referring to only percentage of unlicensed waste disposal sites, 56. Now, 56 out of the 341 is a very, very low target as far as I'm concerned. And these are the ones that you have surveyed. What about the ones that you haven't surveyed? What are those figures, and what do you think those figures would reflect in actual fact? Then the number of buyback or recycling facilities created, you're referring to the target as 13. Could we know where these sites are? Are they spread across all the provinces or not? Or are they concentrated in a particular area? Further to that, just 1 minute, please. The EMIs, the 50 that were trained, where are they? Where are the municipalities? Are they also spread right across the provinces? Are they not spread across the provinces? We'd like to know where they are so that we can monitor in actual fact, in the time ahead, how effective they actually are and how much work is being done there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. They've covered me, but the slight one is this one. I want to know, because there is mining and there is the environment, I want to know how is your relationships in terms of the environment, because I want to know how far is your enforcement working. Are they leaving the private sector with the mining alone, or are you together? Because where I come from, I don't see it happening. So I want to know, where are you? Is the mining and this that side with the private sector, and then are you doing the local municipality only? You don't engage in the private sectors. Thank you.
Sorry, Chair, I just forgot to ask one question. A lot of the stats that are provided here are all in percentages, but it can reflect only to just one incident, and it will give you 100%. It would be much better if you put targets to that, I think, so that one can then monitor the percentage that you have achieved. Thanks.
Anyone else?
question?
It's a question of mine. I think don't worry about the cost. I think what you must do for me to understand this thing properly is to go and redo the... You know, your first input you gave us the new diagram to say, this is a new unit advisory and so on. Now, in these inputs, the problem is there's some units that have been there, but they've added chief directors and directorates. That picture doesn't show us that. So I think let's redo the picture and just show, say, this one is new, these two chief directorates, these three directorates. So at least we have a better picture than of what it is. I mean, the cost implications are something else to look at, but at least it'll give me a better plan. Okay? So instead of trying to work it out now, try and rather give us a new diagram. All right.
This
inaccurate legal unit of mine.
I'll try and answer as best that I can. Chair, you've already touched on the restructuring. You must remember that these are new structures. That's why they're currently reflected as vacant. It's going to come into effect basically on the 1st of April. So currently, in terms of our structure, there are people in their post, and they have been doing the work that needs to be done. But I'll give it to the COO to actually just expand a little bit in terms of that. And the reason why I'm acting is in terms of the new structure, until the appointments are made, I'll still be responsible for the waste function in terms of as at 1st of April. Currently, all our senior posts are filled. So as at 1st of April, I'll be acting in that post. In terms of the waste issues, I'm going to ask Mr. Shitangoni to assist in terms of the database for contaminated land, also in terms of the issues around the municipal sites and how we're going to monitor them. Just to mention there that we've done a fair amount of work in terms of the municipalities, in terms of actually training municipal officers in dealing with waste and that kind of thing. It's what I mentioned earlier in terms of us setting the framework and then ensuring that the municipalities are capacitated to actually deal with waste. Mr. Shitangoni will also address the issue around the unlicensed waste sites and the applications that have been received in that regard, and also the issue around the recycling facilities. In terms of the EMI, we've got currently EMIs at national, provincial, and in our parks as well. This training is very, very specialized training in terms of evidence gathering, that kind of thing. Currently, we have a bit of a challenge in terms of the local authority EMIs in that they've undergone the training, but we need to have some of them designated, and we're actually working on that. We had it in the Lekgotla past week, basically, where the first documents were signed, where the MECs are going to start designating the EMIs in Limpopo. So we're starting the process of designating the local authority EMIs as well.
Thank you, DDG. Honorable members, on what plan to deal with unplanned landfill sites from the municipality? He had already alluded to the fact that we trained the landfill site operators across the country. That was last year, from year before last, just to capacitate them and understand how these things must be planned and how do they work. In this coming financial year, we are going to be training the CFOs and the TINGAL directors in the municipality. That is specifically to try and deal with this planning issue as well. You would realize that there's quite a lot of landfill sites across the country for the municipalities, and some of them are this 1041. And that's why from the action plan that we've done, most of them are for closure because they've been developed on the wrong place or without any planning at all. Some of them are not even required, so it was just feeling to say every local municipality must have a landfill site. So it's for that reason that we are training them, we are capacitating them, we are making them understand. One of the very important issues that we've been raising is that the Waste Act requires designation of waste management officers. Now, those are the people that in the municipalities that are designated, they will be assisting as well with the planning going forward. In terms of the database... Sorry, Chair?
Have you done an audit?
Yes, we have done an audit.
The Act says there must be a waste environment, whatever. Have we done an audit to see which municipalities have got, which haven't got, and those that have got, what their qualification levels are for the job. Have we done that?
The Waste Act said there must be designation of waste management officers. Now, there's no specific qualifications for that. It's basically somebody who will be responsible for issues of waste management in the municipality. In the last quarter that we had last year, there were indications that in most of the municipalities, they haven't designated the waste management officers. And we have made that request, and it's going through the MINTEC and MINMEC structure so that municipalities start to designate them.
But where is that report?
I think the report will be tabled.
No, you should come and table it here for us. You must send it to us so that we can see when we interact. I mean, what is... It's very difficult for us to follow. You know, we're in a precarious position. We're making policy. And there's so much you can do. So it's difficult for us to know if we don't have that information. Okay? I'll send that report. Okay, go ahead with your answer.
Thank you. We will send it to us. On the database of contaminated land, We don't have a database as we sit now. And this is a new area. That's why Part 8 of the Waste Act is not yet into effect. And some of the instruments that the DDG presented today are to help to bring this Part 8 of the Waste Act into effect. Now, we know that the Department of Water Affairs, and actually I'm going for a meeting after this, they have some database all over in the regional offices of contaminated land. But the details that are there are not the details to the level that we would want to use when we bring the Part 8 into effect. And as such, one of the things that we need to do as a target there is to make sure that in this financial year, we've got a database of contaminated land in this country. And to what level are they contaminated? On the application...
Not in your targets.
I think it's there.
It's such a good idea. I can't understand why...
I think probably the DDG might have, I don't know, in the slides, but that's one of our targets.
I didn't remember it.
Sorry? Contaminated land database. Yeah, I think it was there.
Where?
Yeah. Number three there, yeah. Three from the top.
How far do you say it is now?
We are on the process now to gather the available information, which we know that Water Affairs have to some extent, which will help us as the base. We've got a meeting today and tomorrow, just in Cape Town, as a way of trying to consolidate whatever they have in terms of the information on contaminated land. Then we should be able to move forward in this coming financial year. On the applications to be processed, I think when we report there, it was just like a little bit combined. The 120 applications, this refers to the applications we have received in the 2011-12 financial year, and they have nothing to do with the 341. Now, the 341 that we have surveyed and we have found out that we've got about 341 sites across the country that are not licensed. Now, one of the things that we needed to do, or a target that we needed to achieve by 2011-12, was to develop an action plan. Now, we took the outcome 10 delivery agreement into effect as well. As you would see, if you would have presented up until 2015-16, you would have seen the increase in the target. And I think when we were presenting last week here, the DG did mention that we requested funding from Treasury so that we'll be able to put some more number that which we could license. But unfortunately, that didn't come through. So meaning that we would need to dig deep down to try and find some sources of funds so that we can at least try to move on these. There was a discussion as well to say, why are we licensing them? And I think she responded to some of those questions last week. Now, that's why our target for this financial year, because of lack of resources, we have got only 56 sites out of the 341. We had a meeting last week, which we normally call it a task team for licensing, and we were very happy with the progress that the municipality is starting to make in this regard. They are, out of the 341 that are not licensed, where certain municipalities are making some strides In other words, there are applications currently with the Provincial Department of Environmental Affairs as a licensing authority. On the buyback, which I think is the last issue, this won't be centralized, obviously, and I would think it would have to be something that would be done across the whole country and take into effect the major source of generation of this waste stream. Thank you, Chair.
Now, I think what you must do in this unit is you should start drafting a report of your interactions with the municipality. So if you're trying to get databases worked out, which municipalities have not been done, which have been done, if you're trying to get landfill, which have been done, which haven't been done, you know, all the, so that one can measure the policy environment you're operating, one can measure to what extent we're actually succeeding in that. So it seems to me we need a kind of a separate report, probably from that gentleman. Are you a chief director or directorate, sir?
I'm a director.
Director?
Yes, I was
you,
asked
you
to come.
Clearly not that important because a lot of chief directors have been created. I'm only joking. At a directorate level. But you know what I'm trying to say? If we've got tasks that municipalities are doing, if we do not get a report from you, we're completely in the dark as a committee. So it's very important on this waste stuff that if there are things like the database, all the things that you're trying to achieve and that you're trying to measure and monitor, that there's a report there. You're saying it's going better. But I want to make that assessment myself. So how can I make the assessment if I don't have the information? You know? This is what municipalities have done. These are the ones that haven't done it. So that's the kind of database report we need to get here to understand how successful these many chief directorates are that have been created.
Thank you, Chair. I think we really appreciate that, and we'll make sure that you've got that. The action plan that we have currently, it's only we didn't know that project has to come through. It's very clear. It tells you where are the sites, which one, what's going on. We've got that information regarding the unlicensed landfill sites. The only one which we don't have, obviously, which we want to develop, and you would like it, Chairperson and the Honourable Members, when we present it, the DG will present it, I hope. It will be in a very good way, and we will see even the reduction in number of those sites. The contaminated land register as well, we want to make it with our GIS sections. We are already in discussions with them, where we can give you one picture of South Africa as to how it's looking in 2012-13 and how it's improving as we are moving forward. Thank you very much.
You can talk to DJ how you want to present it, but we need to get that information, okay? All right. Were those all the answers? Were there any more?
No, there was a question around mining and the private sector and our involvement with mineral resources. Currently, there are dual regulatory processes applying to mining. The mining operations itself is not covered by the National Environmental Management Act. It's covered by the Mineral Petroleum Resource Development Act and is dealt with by the Department of Mineral Resources. And we are a commenting authority. Often, though, some of those mining actions inadvertently trigger a listed activity in terms of the EIA regulations, and they still require our authorizations for that activity or the provincial authorization for that activity. And that is exactly why there was the need in terms of the integration of the regulatory processes so that there can be regulatory certainty, first of all, but also that the norms and standards of the National Environmental Management Act must apply to the mining industry as it applies to any other industry in the country. Currently, it is the one industry where the principles of the National Environmental Management Act does not apply. So we're closer and further apart and closer and further apart over the past 8 years, is as long as this process has gone. But as we've reported to the Chair, there's now yet another proposal that we are ready to submit to the ministers for consideration and which we would include in the briefing to yourselves in the second week of June, if I remember correctly, of the date for that, around where we are with this. we interact with the Chamber of Mines in terms of our legislative process and in terms of the strategic environmental management tools that we have, like environmental management frameworks, etc. So there we deal with the private industry, but in terms of individual mines, we do not have jurisdiction over the mining operations itself currently in terms of the legislative framework. I think there has been a response in terms of Dr. Huang's question around the vacancy. Those posts does actually technically not yet exist because the structure has not yet been approved. So that is why our vacancy rate is still incredibly low, but we are proactive by indicating them as being vacant there so that we can implement the moment we've got the signatures in place.
Where are you going now? You'll be one of the big job creators.
Gee, I think we are taking very serious that you want us to use consultants less and do work more ourselves, that we are creating that capacity to do the work ourselves. That's also where the specialists come from.
Even I'm speechless. No, it is correct. I mean, I joke about it, but I also don't joke about it. I joke about it in the sense that I know departments, I've been around for a long time, and I know that you just have to give a sniff to a department, and they will create chief directors going out of fashion. I know that. On the other hand, this is a policy formulating, and the more expertise at higher levels you get, the better your product should theoretically be. So in that sense, I understand it as well. But for example, let me give you a COO, an example. Two of your units, when they didn't know a chief director to create, they said specialist. Now, you don't need a chief director for specialist, for God's sake. I mean, if they're specialists, they fall under each of the other three that exist. They don't have a separate unit for specialist. And this fellow here, he created a specialist. And then those guys there, also specialists. The oceans who don't know a bloody thing. They don't have a single policy exists. But they're creating specialist units. Now, for example, now there I can see job creation. I see job creation. I don't see a clever plan. So that's why I'm saying I'm lukewarm about this. On the one hand, as I say, I can, in a policy-making structure, the more specialized you get, the least you should be able to outsource and the better you should get a product. But I can also sometimes see that there's creation of chief directors just because DD opened up space. Hey, they move in like hell, and then, but the interesting thing one is the other one with all the directorates. The one someone created 7 directorates under it. The one, the blue one, directorate. 7 directorates. Just like that, within a drop of a hat. So, you know, I can see also what's happening.
I think we understand your lukewarmness, but hopefully we will demonstrate the value, and I think you can trust us a little bit with the creativity that's
I'm running on trust.
I think you can trust us because, right? I mean, as you may appreciate, honourable members, some of you do ask the department questions about the databases, whether it's on at species level, whether it's on waste management sites and municipalities. So you have to have center of information for each of the branches and then have central coordination for planning purposes and coordination within the department. But there's a point where with the reporting overload that we have to produce in recent times, both to Treasury, to DPSA, and to the new, you must remember, Chair, that there are also new ministries in the presidency where we are supposed to send information to. So we need to have a strategic level of coordination of that information and also its suitability and how it gets packaged and taking best practice from other places. That capacity we do not have currently in the department. Yes, we have aspects of that information database, but if we are going to be a specialized and at a press of a button every day. Even now, Chair, as you ask the question, we can generate the data. We're looking forward to that moment in the department, which is why we want the specialists. And
well,
then last
you see, of course, what you're now explaining all this stuff. If you had taken the committee into your confidence when you were doing this originally, we would have been debating it with you, and it will all have been accepted now. It's all in hindsight that we now have. Today, we take three inputs. I look at it and I say, yeah, but these are all new chief directors. For the first time, I see it. So if we had been taken in your confidence and you give all these nice, fancy explanations at that stage, you may have had us on board. We're now catching up. We're catching up now to the changes you're making to a department, and we're doing it completely in the dark. Now, I'm doing it in the dark. I don't know about other people. I'm definitely doing it in the dark. Because I don't, no one has ever explained to me the reason for what, for doing this. I'm trying to work out for myself, saying, okay, policy, structure, you need experts, and so on, so on, so on. I'm trying to work out the reasons for it. But that's the problem I have. If you do not take the committee on board on issues that have budget implications, policy implications, you must expect that you're going to have problems with the committee at some stage. Because we're sitting here in the dark. We're now here doing a budget. We're going to have to approve this budget. I mean, I ask these questions because at the end of the day, I'm going to ask this committee, let's please approve this budget. And we have had no say, we have had no input in this process. So we're now trying to catch up. That's our problem. That's the problem that we have. So you can see why it's so important during the year to engage when things are taking place. That actually a good initiative may pick up problems for all the wrong reasons. These things that they may, all these issues you've done may all be very good. They may be the best thing that's ever happened to the department. But we're now picking up little bits and pieces of this information, trying to make sense of it. Because at no stage have we come here and say, this is what we're doing, this is where we're going with this department, what do you do as a committee, think about this, these are the things that we're trying to do. So, you know, now, while we're trying to oversee your budget, we're trying to catch up. That's the problem with these things. That's the problem when departments are not proactive engaging their committee. That's the problem with it. Okay, last word to you, DJ.
Before the last word, Chair, I'm highly disappointed if it's our legislation that have separated the two, the private sector, whereby the environment is not directly involved. Really, is a serious problem. Sometimes we need to look in that issue really. If everybody will do as he please, going out because knowing that people are poor, making mines all over the shore, and then there's nobody who's looking after the particular environment, I think really is so bad. I'm afraid even to take the response that I get now back to the school and say, this is to do with petroleum. It's just not on, Chair. We need to. It's not on. Really.
I mean, I wasn't in the committee at the time, but you will remember that the committee had sat with the other committee and made agreements with the Department of Mining Resources that this will be dealt with in a certain way until a certain date, and then it will change. That's why we've got this on our agenda to come back to it all the time. This committee had agreed, and at the moment, issues of environment in mining are dealt with by mining. That's the problem. Not what one, it's a compromise the committee made at the time, and that they will, as I understood it, a transitional arrangement, and then it will change. Then last time in June, this department came and reported to us that the Department of Mining now want to make that position permanent. So we said, as a committee, we're not prepared to be part of that. There was an agreement that this thing will go. So this is now all the talking that's taking place between the ministers on this issue. And that's why I put it back on our agenda for June, so that we can look at this thing again in a more balanced way. But that is our problem, Ms. Mangania. It is that, at the moment, that's how the law stands. It was, as I understood, a transitional arrangement, yet it's still there today. Do I sum it up rightly, did you?
Yeah. Chair, I think the problem is that the transition never happened because the old act wasn't changed, or the changed act was not brought into effect. So the Mineral Petroleum Resource Development Act that applied before NEMA was even in existence is still applicable today, because the amendments to the Mineral Petroleum Resource Development Act has not been brought into effect, and only those amendments would then trigger the transition. So we actually have two phases ahead of us because the amendments have not been brought into effect. So we're working on old order legislation that is still in effect because the amendments have not been brought into effect.
That summarizes much better.
And we hope that Chair and members, when you have an opportunity in the committee's program, when that discussion happens again, there will be an opportunity to have a joint sitting with the other committee to just reflect on the processes. But the ministers, I hope that they will also give us the direction on what they are deciding based on those original agreements that were made. Chair, lastly, I think on the question that was raised on the environmental management inspectors, Isham indicated broadly that we do run the training nationally, but for municipal or local authority EMI designation, they should be across the provinces. But however, we've had a challenge. We've trained quite a number of municipal environmental management inspectors, but they await designation. And that is a matter between the MECs and the mayors in those provinces of those municipalities that are affected. And the department has raised the matter in our intergovernmental structures and at MINMEC. Hopefully there is going to be progress, because there is no point in us continuously training officers and they then are not able to exercise the law in respect of that inspectorate. So that we can also provide exactly which municipalities and which provinces. We can send you that information. Thank you.
Okay, that is an item on our agenda. We'll obviously deal with it more, but it is a serious item, because on the one hand, we need to, if you go and listen to Sona, the Sona speech, it's very clear there on the one hand that one of our big areas of growth is mining. On the other hand, we need to also, Sona is strong on environment. So you have to find the proper balance. How you maximize the use of your resources, particularly in a developing poor country like ours, but to do it in a way that it is firstly sustainable, and secondly that it doesn't affect the environment. And one of the issues clearly is that you need to have one policy on environment. You can't have one policy on all industry and economy. On the environment, have one policy, which is the Department of Environment, and then on mining, have a completely different policy with that department deciding on the environmental aspect of it. I mean, clearly it's just incongruous. It's just not right. The problem is, of course, we must realize that there are strong lobby groups to retain it like that, because clearly there are strong, strong lobby groups that do not want to take into consideration any environmental aspect and don't want to make mines to be regulated. You maximize your profits by making sure that all that you want is a mining license. Once that license is there, of course, that department doesn't have the infrastructure to make sure that all the other possible regulations that take place are there. So that is the incongruity we find ourselves. And it is something we need to deal with in a very sensitive but a very balanced manner. Clearly, we don't want to stop where we have to use our mineral resources. But secondly, we can't. I mean, once we've started destroying parts of our environment, clearly, it has to be a broader policy issue where we do that, if we're going to do it. But, you know, the one thing I do, I you know, just logical to me, is that one framework has to apply to all parts of our economy. You can't have.
We are surrounded by 15 mines. The mines are just in our community. You wake up tomorrow, you are sick, and then nobody is taking responsibility. We have 15 mines around the village. It's too bad where I came from. That's why I'm so disappointed.
Can I also suggest there's a certain party having a policy conference in June. This is a good place to tackle that. Yeah, no. Yeah, the problem that there's a. Arm wrestle between two departments, and in my experience in government, there's only one way to deal with this. This thing must be sent to cabinet, and they must take a policy decision. When you leave things between two departments, you'll never resolve it. Or if you resolve it, it'll be a compromise that is unacceptable. And the only way to do it is they must go through the process they're going through, trying to find each other. But at some stage, we as a department, if we do not feel that the requisite results have been met, then that thing has to be escalated to another level. And it needs to, those policies to be taken. And our job then, of course, in the meantime, is to support and to push and to try and fight the right balances and to make sure our department is doing that work. I mean, I'm here already since November 2010. This issue was one of the first things I heard, and today still Ma Manganya is very upset about this, and we're now in 2012 really. November 2012 probably be the same. So it'll be 2 years. So we need to draw this thing to finalization at a policy level. Obviously, we will be much more involved if any legislation like that came our way, but it hasn't. So it's the policy issues are taken out of our purview at the moment. They're kept in the executive. All right, DG, can I say that overall I'm quite happy with, and I'm sure I'm speaking on behalf of the committee, happy with what we've heard from the department. I think overall there's been some overall improvement. We've raised some issues. Those issues are more sometimes out of ignorance because we weren't part of it, you know, the whole issue of restructuring. I can see the value in where we're going. A lot of new things have happened. A lot of new obligations have taken place. For example, just take a simple example. Take all the working for programs. If you suddenly bring budgets into the department which are double the present budgets of the department, clearly you're going to have to create the framework. I mean, just think in finance. Finance has to create a whole new capacity to be able to make sure that they deal with the financing requirements. All those people are now in the... The only good thing about that process is they fall under different rules under the EPW, WPPP, WDDG, whatever it's called. Because it falls under that funny thing, of course, there are different rules, and in that sense, it's easier to absorb them. Elsewise, you would not be able to just observe them overnight into a department. So, but you have to create the infrastructure in the department now to absorb and deal with that. I can see those things. I mean, if oceans for 19 years down the line don't have a policy on oceans, I mean, clearly it's a huge problem. For whatever the reasons may be, without blaming it. So I can see there's capacities that are needed and so on.
So I think that's something we'll have to watch quite closely, and we'll have to be brief with you more. Once you get approval for these things, I think you should come and tell us. Already I've asked that we get a new framework drafted so we can see exactly what all the new things are, down to whatever directorate level. The issue of the international obligations, your inputs here have not helped us one way. I mean, they're reflecting them here, but it doesn't show us what those obligations are. I mean, we need a diagram to show all these different Nagoya, Natoya, Nanoya, everything you've got. And we need to see what are those. Do we report to them? Do we actually have personnel that are there? You know, I don't know. I mean, I just haven't got a clue. So those are the things. And there are then a few other things that we've also asked, like these reports around local government and so on. But overall, as I say, I thought things were very good. I would ask more accuracy from the legal people with their report. And I've asked for them to redraft that report of theirs so that we have it more accurately, okay? Anyone else want to add something to all this? All right, so at least it helps us with DR now to prepare for our budget vote, which we still don't know when it is, but I've asked this after middle May. So at least we can do that. Now we'll now just have to deal with the entities will be sometime in April, okay? All right, thanks a lot. See you in 3 weeks' time, unless I can, I call that workshop maybe, just, it'll probably just be a day in any case, for us to get a few, but I'll let you know about that, okay? Otherwise, please, if you drive fast, drive fast, if you drink, drink a lot, and other than that, I can wish you only well. I'll have a look at it and we'll, okay. Thanks, DG, thanks a lot. You can tell your department approval will be.
Yeah.
Would you have to follow them?
Can I make